Testing. Stay tuned for Quality News Network.
This is the Quality News Network. In Beirut, a Lebanese cabinet minister, Pierre Gamayel, was assassinated today. He was part of a prominent Christian family in Lebanon and the fifth anti-Syrian political leader to be killed over the past 2 years. His car was rammed from behind, and then at least three gunmen came out and shot him at point-blank range, according to the country's official news agency. Lebanon's political stability appears to be threatened as the country enters into one of the largest political crises in a generation. Massive street protests are planned by Hezbollah and other Syrian allied parties. They are demanding more political power from the Lebanese government of Prime Minister Sinoura. The United States State Department denounced the murder as terrorism. The U.S. has accused Syria and Iran of attempting to overthrow the Lebanese government. Syria, too, condemned the killing today. Making a stop in Hawaii on his way back to Washington from his 8-day trip to Asia, President Bush today met with U.S. troops stationed on the island. Also today, at least three police motorcycles, part of the president's security escort, were involved in an accident. Two officers were hospitalized in serious condition. U.S. and Iraqi forces conducted a raid of Sadr City today, the Baghdad slum controlled by the Shiite anti-American cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. Seven militia members were detained. The military said they may have information about the American soldier who was kidnapped last month in Baghdad. Also in the fortified green zone in Baghdad today, a bomb meant to kill the speaker of the Iraqi parliament exploded inside one of his armored cars. He was unharmed, however, his driver was injured. At Camp Pendleton today, a third Marine entered a plea agreement in connection with the killing of an Iraqi man in April in Hamdaniya. He pleaded guilty today to lesser charges in exchange for his testimony about the incident. A United Nations panel has criticized Israel for its actions in the 34-day war against Hezbollah this summer. The team of UN investigators found that Israel used, quote, excessive, indiscriminate, and disproportionate force, end quote, in a pattern against Lebanese civilians. Nepal has signed a peace deal with Maoist insurgents to end a decade of civil war. At least 12,000 people have died in the conflict. And director Robert Altman died at a Los Angeles hospital last night. He was 81 years old. This year he won a Lifetime Achievement Oscar. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news coming up next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
NASA says its Mars Global Surveyor spacecraft is most likely lost in space. Engineers lost contact with the orbiter earlier this month, and it is unlikely NASA will be able to recover it. The U.S. government has awarded nearly $200 million in contracts for an additional 2.7 million doses of avian flu vaccine. Three vaccine makers will produce it, and it will be stockpiled in the event of an avian flu epidemic. Online advertising in the U.S. has reached a new high. It was $4.2 billion in the third quarter, according to a study by PricewaterhouseCoopers. For the first time, the price of Google shares has gone past the $500 mark. Apple shares have also reached an all-time high price. Analysts speculate the computer company may unveil its first mobile phone, the iPhone. The Walt Disney Company has entered into a deal with Payless Shoe Source to develop a line of Disney-themed footwear. The direct-to-retail agreement will cut out the licensing middleman. And Mattel is recalling more than 4 million Polly Pocket play sets because they contain magnets that could fall off and be swallowed by children. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $60.90 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange, and at the close of Wall Street today. The Dow was up 5 points at 12,321. The Nasdaq was up 2 points, and the S&P 500 was also up 2 points. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Ali Dramoff.
Okay, don't you,
South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Mamas, don't let your babies go out and hang out with youth ministers. Yeah, it's not quite the way the song was sung, but it's pretty damn good advice anyway you slice it. It's about 6.5 minutes after the hour as we begin this Tuesday evening, or Tuesday afternoon, God only knows, edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and let's start in Tennessee. And it's not even prayer meeting night, but this isn't the kind of thing that you let wait. This is a sign of the manifest sickness that is organized, the organized religion industry in the United States. Dyersburg, and I'm assuming that's Tennessee, Dyersburg, Tennessee track coach and youth minister, was arrested Sunday after being accused of raping a 14-year-old girl before a Knoxville track meet. Just let that settle in. He's 44 years old. His name is Timothy Neal Byers. He made bond. Yes, he made bond. After allegedly raping the little girl at Victor Ash Park early Saturday morning. Those of you who know about Victor Ash will possibly see a little bit of irony in that fact. It was, of course, Victor Ash who is alleged to have been the lover of George W. Bush. Yeah, I know. Apparently, this is according to Knoxville police, this creep, this predator, this sick SOB, this youth minister, drove the victim, her older sister, and his two daughters from Dyersburg to Knoxville Friday night for a cross-country meet. According to the police, again, Byers, the youth minister Byers, Reverend Byers, and the girls had arrived at their destination at around 3:30 a.m., and they then decided to rest before the competition began at 11 a.m. It was later in the morning, Saturday morning, that the victim sent a text message to her parents telling them she was in terrible trouble. A family friend had a small aircraft and flew the parents to Knoxville. He's also a suspect in another sexual assault case involving the same trip. Now, see, if I still had listeners from the religion industry, they would say something along the lines of, well, that's not fair to judge everybody by what one man does. But see, I'm not judging everybody by what one man does. These cases are legion. Anybody out there got little girls? Anybody out there? Leave your kids alone with someone from the religion industry? Hey, glory! Reverend Falwell taught me everything I need to know. Because, you see, these things do tie in together. I well remember Dennis Rader, the BTK killer, bind, torture, kill killer of Kansas, whom we found out was a registered Republican and never missed an election. He was also a lay leader of his church. These sick the monsters are almost routinely nestled in the bosom of some organized religion. And why? Well, you may very well have a good idea why. Because these places are havens. They are Simon Pure and Simon Simple, and it's the simple part that gets people hurt. I haven't seen this guy's voting record, but I can guarantee you he's just like, he's probably just like the lay minister that Peter told us about last night, who stood in the pulpit and said, "I still believe George W. Bush is a godly man." It's the definition of godly that gets you in trouble. This is just, well, my heart goes out to the family. My heart goes out to the two or more little girls who got raped by the 44-year-old man of God. You know, if he's a man of God, then I don't know. Every time something rotten happens, somehow or another, God finds his way into it. It really makes you wonder about the Gnostic doctrines after a while, because they had very, very clearly delineated feelings about the so-called one God. It is time in this country, but of course we're not allowed to have this inquiry, because if you called Dr. Dobson on the carpet and you said, you know, look, we think there's a lot of sickness inside your organizations, you're persecuting the Christians. You're persecuting us. You're doing us just like Nero did in A.D. 77 when he lit us on fire to be nightlights in the Vatican gardens. No. What would you do? What would you do if it was your daughter? You know, I'm a death penalty opponent. I don't believe in the death penalty, but these religion industry monsters are doing everything in their power to teach me otherwise. Okay, I'm going to need a geography lesson from one of our Tennessee listeners about Dyersburg versus Knoxville. Dyersburg's on the other far end of the state or something, and I remember Dyersburg. I just can't offhand put my finger on where it should be on the map, even though I'm looking at a map, but print's too small. Victor Ash Park. Victor Ash Park, A-S-H-E, is where the rape occurred. But, you know, this is bad journalism again. I read several different accounts of this story, and they all say a Dyersburg track coach and youth minister. But no one will identify the church. No one will identify the den of vipers that coddled and nurtured this rapist. You know, they all say he was a youth minister. They all say he was a track coach. 14-year-old girl. What has become of her life? How long will it take to get her well from this? And I suppose one could just simply ask, what in the name of all that is holy is going on in America? I didn't even touch on the Michael Richards story last night because I hate celebrity gossip. You know, I go around and I look for news here and there, and I look for stuff that I think might be interesting to discuss. And today I found a news report. It was important. It was breaking, and it was about the fact that Rosie O'Donnell said that Kelly Ripa's remarks about Clay Aiken putting his hand on her mouth were homophobic. And that was sitting there next to a story about a possible war with Iran. And next to a story about Michael Richards. This is just, it's astonishing to me. I don't like celebrity news. I don't like salacious news. I would rather sit and have a conversation about the rights and the wrongs of things. I don't give a tinker's damn about, and by the way, that's not swearing. I got an email about that. A tinker's damn is not swearing. D-A-M-N. It's not D-A-M-N. It's a tinker's damn. D-A-M. In other words, well, for those of you who have read Beowulf, Grendel's dam, dame without the E. So it's not the idea of a person who sharpens scissors or whatever it is a tinker does, saying, dang it, no. So that's not swearing for those of you who are concerned. I don't give a tinker's damn about celebrity news. However, in light of what went on with the Michael Richards thing, I think it points to something a lot darker in our culture. And that is not a racial jibe, and you guys know that. But we live in a country that touts its goodness, its uprightness, its moral superiority. And yet you can't go a day without finding a youth minister who's decided to involuntarily shtup a couple of 14-year-old little girls. Or sometimes some 14-year-old little boys. And yet on the news sites you find out that Kelly Ripa has called out Rosie O'Donnell for saying that her complaining about Clay Aiken putting his hand on her face on the show when he was guest hosting was homophobic. You know, frankly, I don't care if Clay Aiken put his full fist down Kelly Ripa's throat. It ain't news. This is more of that ginned-up fakery. The stuff that covers up for what really is news. Is it news, as it turns out, that Nicole Brown Simpson's sister now says that they were offered millions of dollars in hush money to just shut up and let Fox do its little O.J. Simpson thing, and that Fox only relented after the Brown family refuse the money? That might be news. Because it speaks to Fox News' and News Corp's and Rupert Murdoch's overarching concern, which is the money. You know, this moral values news network that speaks to the religion industry that has the youth ministers that rape the 14-year-old little girls, really wanted to run the O.J. Simpson reality television confession. And if the Brown family just would have shut up, they would have been millions of dollars richer. Lord, they wanted to run that during sweeps. They were aching to run that during sweeps. And did you see the video of Michael Richards' apology? You know what I did? And I'm not gonna run it here because it's somehow not appropriate, but, you know, you're technically savvy. You're not. It's not like you're a bunch of ditto heads that are going, what? I want to turn my computer on. What? You're not right-wing idiots. You can do the same thing I did. Go and look at Mel Gibson's apology. And then look at Michael Richards's. I would say that they are culturally on a similar level. Look at what Michael Richards did yesterday on the David Letterman show, and compare that with Mel Gibson's. And tell me who seems to be more disturbed by the wrongness of his acts, and who seems to be more contrite. Clearly to me, the answer to that is that the contrite one is Michael Richards. Now, I think there are some things that are in line to discuss, just about where I am with all of this. I can think of one occasion, and it was an occasion where we were discussing George Macaca Allen's association with the concerned conservative citizens of America. One of whom is a real right-wing loony nut job out of St. Louis who has a radio show, or had one. And I read you a letter that was filled with that most vile of racial epithets for describing a person of African extraction. And frankly, I am still not over it. I still feel dirty for having read the words. So I think it's one of those things where you're told never to say never, because sooner or later the exception will come along that breaks the rule. But I am, you know, I'm one of the pinkest of Americans. I sunburn under the refrigerator lamp. And as such, I have no cultural background by which I am entitled to use that racial epithet, nor do I ever have a need to. I don't like calling it the N-word or the N-bomb. And maybe it's a bit of a mouthful, but I'm perfectly happy saying that most caustic, most hateful, most vicious, most vitriolic of racial epithets. I'm content with that. I'm not going to run the Richards audio. Not because I feel like you're not capable of hearing it, or that there would be that it would be that we're just too squeamish for it. I'm sick of that damn word. Now I can give you an opinion, but I can't speak with any authority as to whether or not other people should use that word who aren't pink. I have my own opinion, but it is also informed by my pinkness. So I wish the word would just go away and leave parlance altogether. But as long as there are people like Bob Corker running for Senate who use jungle drums to associate with an African American's name every time the name is mentioned in a political ad. As long as there are advertisements that reference the danger that those people pose to our white women. As long as entire populations along the Gulf Coast of Mississippi and Louisiana and portions of Alabama are left to simply stew in toxic filth and die because, frankly, they're the wrong color and the wrong economic class, then I suppose that word is going to have some parlance. and it's going to have some credit in the hearts and the mouths of other people. And that is a pity. But I don't think there was anything wrong with Kanye West when he said, George Bush don't like black people, because George Bush don't like black people. But don't feel bad, black people. We're in the boat with you. George Bush don't like poor white people. He doesn't care much about middle class people. The entire Republican Party doesn't care much for black, poor, white, or middle class people. They care about themselves. So any time that Republicans are in power, you may rest assured there will be another Katrina. And you may rest assured that enough damage has been done in this culture to do great harm and to build that swelling undercurrent of just racial angst that you saw boil over the top in Michael Richards' screed. Which I'm sure you have seen by now, because you can't turn the television. I just thank God that Bullwinkle's baby sister, what's her name, Rita, whatever, isn't on anymore, because it would have been obscene. I think she would have ripped her clothes off while the video was running. Yeah, I know. Agnes is making a face. But all of that is the undercurrent, and yet of course there's good news, because a lot of people of color came together in Tar Heel, North Carolina, and brought an end to unnecessary firings by Smithfield Meats in that hellish kill plant that they maintain there, where 32,000 hogs are slaughtered and dismembered per day. So that's sort of where we are this evening. We're in a place where we talk about how free we are, and yet at the same time, we are in a place where the evil is so manifest that youth ministers rape little girls. That's girls plural. Where comedians, in a desperate attempt to fend off a heckler, resort to the most disgusting racial epithets. Where drunken movie stars stop on the side of the road and blame the ills of the world on the Jews. Where talk show host ladies declare that another person is homophobic over something that happened on a stupid talk show that doesn't matter, and we call it news. And so here we have perhaps this is in the way of a bit of a little support group for the normal people. Perhaps this is a place where we can come together and put that sort of filth away from us and try to understand why that kind of filth exists. And we can wonder and we can query as to whether or not that sort of filth can be remedied. So that's where I see us on this evening. We're going to take a break. Jump right in. There are several phone lines open. The phone number you probably already know. If you don't, write it down. Have it tattooed. That would be cool. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yeah. hated you.
Major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Home radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP. That's stealing. Or have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy Birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
Another day is over. Another light is breaking. And I'm tired, but I'm wise about you, my little one. I feel you in the water. See you in the corner of my cell, babe. Who else, babe, knows you like I do? As we go again round the stars and their friends loving me.
Now is the time to join together to protect our world, or we could lose all it gives us. To learn how you can help, call for your free World Wildlife Fund Action Kit at 1-800-CALLWWF. Together, we can be a force for nature.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Try to figure out the motivation of your producer in picking out this song or that. Yeah. About 26 minutes before the hour, and of course, you know, you guys always come through in the email or the chat room or on the telephone. Dyersburg, Tennessee is in the far northwest corner of the great state of Tennessee, right smack dab on top of the New Madrid Fault. And, that, you know, when you look at Tennessee, Dyersburg to Knoxville is pretty much halfway across the east of the Mississippi part of the United States. And so it's late Friday night, early Saturday morning, and your baby girl calls you, you know, she can't even talk. She text messages you and says, I'm in trouble. Geography fans, how far is it from Dyersburg to Knoxville? Mothers, what do you do? Well, you know what the church is doing right now? Church is calling its lawyer. Trying to make sure that they can't get none of the love offerings by suing them. So they'll be there to get it. They'll be there to get them to sign a release just as quickly as they possibly can reach them. Let's go to the phones. To Maine we go, and our good friend David. David, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Oh, Bob, I got to disagree with you on this Michael Richards thing, like, completely. First,
why?
Of all, wait, let me tell you why. First of all, Michael Richards was doing that humor in October. It is the club's responsibility. They knew he was going to have material like that, Mike. I've been reading. Bob, I've been reading. They knew he was going to come out and do stuff like that. And they knew he was off the wall, and they knew he was a little bit 51-50, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but was he playing the epithet card in those gigs in October?
Yes. In October he was. People knew he was off the wall. He was crazy. And you know, this is the thing I can't stand about it, Bob. People disown Michael Richards like they were looking out for him in the first place. Give me a break.
I'm not disowning him. I mean, I know,
but a lot of people are. That's what I'm saying. Like, this is something I'll see on IMDb. I'm never going to buy a Seinfeld DVD again. It's just so retarded. And I'm thinking, this is this guy, and this is the problems he has inside of him. And he was like, and this is what he has. And whether it was from domestic family abuse, I'm thinking it's from his father, who railed on him probably constantly, or something to that effect, because he's had issues like this. You know what? Michael Richards is like a modern-day Chevy Chase, if you think about it.
Well, I got to thinking today, and there was an ABC network comedy program right about the same time that Saturday Night Live started out. They tried to compete with something called Fridays, and Michael Richards was one of the ensemble players there. And there is, I can't remember.
Oh, right, that was the Andy Kaufman bit.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. Sometimes, when Richards came on, people have to understand, when Richards came on Letterman, let's be clear who brought him on. It was Jerry. And if people who don't know Jerry, that veil needs to come off. That guy is an a-hole for real. He has been dictating for years how people should behave around him. And he has, even before. It happened like right after he got famous with that show. Stern was talking about this on the radio, like how Seinfeld would beg him. This is a story that a lot of people don't know. Beg him on the show. He goes, "Oh, my show's in the toilet. My show's in the toilet. You gotta let me on. You gotta let me on." He goes, "But Jerry, I don't think you're that funny." But he's like, "All right, I'll give you a break anyway." So he let him on the show, and he immediately changed after that. But the thing is that he forced him on the Letterman. And the funny thing about it is, have you watched the whole interview?
You mean the Letterman interview?
Yeah, I mean the Letterman interview with the part with Michael Richards.
Yeah.
Okay, if you look at it, it's not scripted, it's not rehearsed. That's why I respect Michael Richards. Is he crazy? You're damn right, Bob. He's crazy.
There may be some truth in some of the stuff that was slung at him in the comedy club, and that is that, you know, he's been spocked,
I'm going to flip a 180. Do you think...
Oh, wait. I just threw you a great line there, and you walked right over. He's been spocked.
Okay.
You know, I mean, do you remember when Leonard Nimoy had to put out the book called I Am Not Spock?
Right.
Leonard Nimoy had a bunch of roles and stuff before Star Trek hit. After Star Trek, nothing.
Okay, now I'm going to pose a question to you.
Okay.
Here's the question. What would that crowd have done if that was Lenny Bruce? Lenny Bruce was known to do the same thing. I'm making a thinnest line possible to this.
Well, no, I understand that, but you got to also understand that given the dynamics of the time. Some of the places that Lenny played, there wouldn't have been any African American people allowed in.
Oh, that's true too. But what I'm saying is this: the Laugh Factory is known for racially charged humor. Yeah, it does. And you know what's changed this now? You know what's going to change this? Those cell phone cams. I tell you, they're going to change that now because you got sites like TMZ and the Drudge Report, and this footage is gold. People will pay top dollar for this. But I'm telling you. The black comedians, the Jewish comedians, the Mexican comedians, the white comedians, they've all delved into this. What they do is they find a scapegoat. The club finds a scapegoat, and they say, "It's Michael Richards! He's the bad guy!"
Well, you know, and that's part of one of the things that just really disgusted me was the pontificating Carlos Mencia.
Oh, well, you know...
You know, that crosses a line. Oh, do tell.
Did you hear what Paul Rodriguez said?
No.
Paul Rodriguez said this. I said this to John the other day. He said, I think... This is so hypocritical, it's beyond. I think freedom of speech should have limitations. You think freedom of speech should have limitations?
Well, freedom of speech does have limitations. That just goes to show how dirt ignorant Paul Rodriguez is. You can't yell movie in a crowded firehouse.
No, I mean, what he meant by that, he doesn't want somebody like that in a stand-up comic environment to do that. See? The problem is like I said before, Richards has done this before. He was doing this in October. You have to ask yourself, why didn't Laugh Factory ban him? You know why they didn't ban him? Because nobody wanted to approach him because they knew he would be angry, and they also just wanted to drag him out there because he had that brand name.
Well, that's sure he did. He, you know, I mean, it looked like a packed house to me. Maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, look at, I remember the Wanted Live in Concert movie that Richard Pryor did, and you know, he's about 10 minutes into the routine, and all of a sudden he stops the show completely and goes, look it, white peoples! And went off on one of those brilliant riffs, because Richard could do that nerdy white voice better than anybody.
Now, and, was it Chevy Chase the one who said with Richard went nigger?
What? Dead honky was the answer.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to know something? That is true to life, people.
Well, that can't. But I have said in the past that can't happen in America today. And I want to be clear about this discussion. I don't give, again, that phrase, a tinker's damn about celebrity news, celebrity gossip. But this, David, points to something beyond that in our culture.
Oh, it's most definitely. But you know what? It's with all races, and people need to understand that. Because I want to say the same thing. Eddie Griffin, a black comedian, go in and talk about the Holocaust and the Germany and the Jews, and he's not going to be on national TV doing that back then. Now that we have cell phone cams, if a black comedian does that, will they put him out there like that? We'll see. Will they put him out like Michael Richards? I don't know. Because you know what?
But see, I'm responsible. David, I'm responsible as a pink person.
I know.
I've got room to talk about what pink people say. I've got room to talk about what American people say by virtue of being an American.
Right.
You know, I find the use of that word reprehensible in all its forms.
I understand what you're saying, but people have to understand that there's a feedback loop of when you do irreverent comedy, it's going to boil up to that point. I'm sorry. If people don't believe that, then...
Well, no, I'm not disagreeing with you there. I mean, I thought back to the Dave Chappelle bit about the blind black man who was raised in a white orphanage and didn't realize he was black and became one of the leading Klansmen in the nation. Did you ever see that bit?
No.
It's hilarious.
The Dave Chappelle. The white guy, yeah.
Well, I mean, he's a black guy.
Yeah, the black guy. Yeah, I know what you're saying. And he thought he was white. Yeah, he's blind.
Yeah, there's some sort of a double standard at work.
I don't know how much of it is it's, you know what, it's not per se a double standard. It's just that the media likes focusing so much it finds so much a scapegoat. See, this is another thing. It finds a scapegoat, but the clubs encourage this. Certain clubs encourage this. I'm sorry.
Well, I've done a lot of reading in the last day or so, and I haven't been to, you know, I live up a holler somewhere. We don't get down to the big city of Charleston very often. But it's my understanding that comedy clubs have degenerated into this sort of behavior as a whole. You know, people show up to heckle the comedian, to see what the comedian can take.
You know, Bob, before I move on to my next story, if I have time.
Go ahead.
I just want to say that this whole Michael Richards thing is just, you know, it's just a symbol of exactly what you get when you get uncensored comedy. And the club should have disowned him. But you know what? You know why they didn't, Bob. They didn't disown him.
Because he sells tickets.
Well, he wasn't selling that many tickets. The thing is they want that kind of buzz. Did you hear what Richards said last night? He was awful, but he said, you know? That's what they're about now.
Well, buzz, sure, but, you know, I think ticket sales are still the bottom line.
Right.
And, you know, I can't put what Michael Richards did on a continuum with Lenny Bruce or Richard Pryor because, A, what Lenny Bruce and Richard Pryor did was funny.
That's true, but again, it's just a perspective of what people...
We'd have you hanging from a tree with a fork in your...
I know, but it's just a perspective on what people want to hear. And you know what's funny? I mean, it seems like the media really likes to hear this stuff.
Well, it does, because journalists are, as we've noted on a number of occasions, David, journalists are incredibly lazy people.
Right.
This is a story that writes itself.
Right, and you know what? And the only good that can come out of this is it opens up another dialogue that people seriously need to have in America. And that's really the bottom line. It opens up a dialogue. Now, talk radio channels, what they do with it, that's another story.
Well, did you hear any right-wing talk radio today, David? I mean, I'd be curious.
You know, I just listen to Man Cow, and the reason why I listen to Man Cow because I want to hear a libertarian ideology because I pretty know much what the right-wing philosophy is. But, you know, libertarian, I don't think Richards is a racist or whatever. That doesn't make Richards a racist. Like,
well, you know, and this, you know, this story sits side by side with a remark made by Mark Furman. Remember Mark Furman?
I remember Mark Furman. Well, the remark he made last week.
Yeah.
About the KFC chicken. They didn't. You know what's funny? They didn't roll in the footage on that one. They didn't roll that beautiful baked bean footage as that commercial.
No, they didn't.
They did not.
And yet, it's of the same. It's of the same spirit.
You know, Bob, quickly moving.
Why didn't he just say watermelon?
I don't know. I think the thing is that Michael Richards seriously does have problems, and to throw an Alex Jones conspiracy spin on it, he's also a 33rd Mason. But
stop that!
No, he is.
I don't care.
I know, but it's funny. Okay, did you hear what happened in Dubai?
No, what?
George Herbert Walker Bush got heckled. These are the comments they made in the audience. People should hear this. I hope they have a cell phone cam and TMZ puts it up. But I'm not holding my breath on that one, Bob. We do not respect your son, a woman in the audience told Bush. We do not respect what he's doing all over the world. Bush appeared stunned at the audience of young business leaders, whooped and whistled in approval at the woman's comments coming after the retired president had just finished a folksy address on leadership by telling the audience how deeply hurt he feels when his son, the president, is criticized. This son is not going to back away, Bush said. That sounds like a country lyric. He's not going to change his view because some poll says this or some poll says that or some heartfelt comments from the lady who feels deeply in her heart about something. You can't be president of the United States and conduct yourself if you're going to cut and run. Oh, my God. This is going to work out in Iraq. I understand the anxiety. It's not easy. And then somebody stands up and a student says, U.S. wars were aimed at opening markets for American companies and the globalization was contrived for Americans' benefit. This happened, by the way, at the expense of the rest of the world. But Bush was having none of it. This is Bush's answer. This is his retort, his comeback. I think that's weird and it's nuts. To suggest that everything that we do is because we're hungry for money? I think that's crazy. I think you need to go back to school.
You know, what do you expect from a guy who was baffled by a damn barcode scanner?
You know, Bob,
these people aren't connected. This awful, awful little welfare trash family, and I mean that sincerely. The Bushes really are that. You know, they've never made a daggum dollar that they didn't make off of the American people. They are their trash and they're disconnected trash.
I heard they just got three Secret Service agents beat up in Hawaii.
Oh, my God.
So you see how many people like this president. See, this is the thing. It's the bubble. The media has created this illusion that this president and this administration is so well-liked. And when they finally step out, they're like, oh, wait a minute. I've been lied to.
Well, you know, when people on the so-called Arab street start turning on George, I mean, he's practically a member of the Saudi royal family.
You know, Bob, the thing is, I'm waiting for the footage of this. I hope somebody has some cell phone camera footage of this.
I'd love to see it because, then it'll show up on the Internet because Fox and ABC and CBS and NBC will do everything in their power to keep it from reaching the American people.
Yeah, before I go, did you see that cartoon I sent you?
No, the Ted Roll? Tom Tomorrow?
Tom Tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, everything he does is brilliant.
Yeah, that's true. And on that note, Bob.
Well, David, thank you. I appreciate your input. I don't know that we've reached.
You know what? I'm going to say this right now. Anyone who thinks that this is a cut and dry issue is just insane.
There is no such thing as a cut and dried issue that relates to race in this country.
I know you can't because all kinds of doors have been open. You know, I was talking to my friend. I said they should have a club where all racists can get together and they can just yell out things at random to get this energy out. And people can pay money for it. Because if we're going to go there, let's go there. Let's have that club where all the racists can get together. And,
you know, I think one of the cardinal sins committed by Richards and many others, for that matter, as far as I'm concerned, is the greatest sin of a comedian, not being funny.
That's true, and also he's a 33rd Mason.
I'm a Shriner.
Oh, okay.
I'm kidding.
All right,
later, David.
Later.
Bye now.
Bye.
Let's see. Let's go to David in Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Bob. Oh, boy, am I fired up about this. I'm sorry. The other David has raised some points that I am in, quite likely, tremendous disagreement with as far as racists getting together and getting it out of their system.
That's called a Klan meeting.
Yeah, and we started to acknowledge how bad it was that racists got together. We started the baby steps toward eliminating them getting together in the 40s, the 1940s, and as a Southerner that watched it go down and hated every minute of it, let's not go back there. You root it out and you take it away. Now then, there's been reference to Lenny Bruce. It took me a while to catch on to the genius of Lenny Bruce, and I want to make a flat statement that cannot, in my mind, be disputed. Lenny Bruce is to this Richards character as Da Vinci is to a house painter. Let's just forget about same ballpark, not even the same zip code. Just put some separation, and there have been veiled references Lenny Bruce using racial terms. I haven't heard everything Lenny Bruce did, but one of the great losses of my life, physical losses, is in the earliest eras of bootleg tapes being passed around, and I would like to say it the way Lenny said it, if I may.
Okay.
In a performance before Wilt Chamberlain left the city of Philadelphia, Lenny was performing there. And in an era in the 60s, when athletes would use tobacco openly, smoke a cigar, smoke a cigarette, Wilt Chamberlain was smoking a cigarette and in the front row of a club where Lenny was performing. Lenny leaned over and said, "Let me have a drag of that, Wilt." Wilt passed him the cigarette. As he brought it close to his lips, he said, "Oh, man, you nigger lift it." That is appropriate use of humor in its darkest, most dangerous, but between those two men, complete connection.
And the room came unglued.
And Wilt Chamberlain, looking up first to make sure he didn't hit a chandelier, stood up and applauded. Fact. So let's get that out of the way. I have never seen a Seinfeld episode beginning to end. I started evaluating, listening to, accepting or rejecting humor before I was born. My father was a comic. I don't get Seinfeld because I'm of a different era. And if I wanted to watch an episode of Seinfeld, all I had to do was to know that if that guy whose only talent was to do a banana peel backdrop to his buttocks and show up with a bad haircut, when that guy showed up on the tube, I knew it was time to leave. So this man, in utter frustration that not being in an ensemble that propped his lame butt up, came unstuck because somebody, among others, was and would continue to heckle him. He entered into a role. An actor has done that all of his life. This guy just entered into a spot because of the absolute horror.
Well, see, David,
he knows now that in the absence of Seinfeld, he has been painted into the ultimate typecast corner. He's a crazy guy with a bad haircut.
Yeah, he's got hair instead of ears. He's been spotted.
Your turn. I have.
Well, no, there's a couple of things I want to do because there's a couple of doors you just opened, David. Your dad was a comic.
Yeah.
So I would assume you have heard your fair share of one-liners over the course of the years.
Yes.
The other thing that you've opened up is this idea of humor for the sake or something passing for humor that has in its roots not whatever it was that was in the roots of Lenny or Richard Pryor's comedy. Okay, there's something going on there that I can't put my finger on that's not going on here. And I've got another example of that. We're running out of time. I think maybe we better continue this on the other side of the news.
Sure.
But there's an outtake video out there. If you go to YouTube and you type in as a search Borat Animal Shelter.
Borat Animal Shelter.
You will find footage that was shot here in Fayette County, West Virginia, at our animal shelter, with a woman who truly, truly loves the animals that are in her charge. She tries to keep them from dying. And I'll go ahead and spoil it, because it's video of Sacha Baron Cohen, an Cambridge-educated British-Jewish man, who is making a lot of money out of parodying Muslim bigotry against Jews. Because he's playing Borat, a Muslim man, and in this particular outtake scene, he gets a little puppy, and he tells our animal shelter lady to put her two index fingers to either side of her head, pointing up, like horns.
Mm-hmm.
And he sets the dog down and says, "Get the Jew! Get the Jew! Attack!"
No, that's not funny.
I thought that was about as funny as kicking a crutch out from under a little kid.
There's no setup. There's no connection. I go back to the example of a man on stage personally. And what's Lenny Bruce? Will Chamberlain's leg had more muscular power than all of Lenny Bruce.
Will Chamberlain's leg had more height than Lenny Bruce.
Probably. All right. That is taking the ultimate chance. And it's got layers, Bob. There's intellectual rigor involved in that. There is true study of the human condition in what Lenny Bruce said to Wilt Chamberlain face to face. There was both the mental gamble, and Lord knows there was a hell of a physical gamble.
Well, and there was humor that took a whole lot of work to get through in what Andy Kaufman did with Jerry Lawler.
To a lesser degree, but yes.
Or the business about wrestling women. And frankly, this is all a sad and tawdry attempt to go not where Richard Pryor and Lenny Bruce were going, but more in the vein of where Andy Kaufman was going.
I'm not a real fan of Kaufman, but Kaufman ranks so far above the man that played Kramer. Kramer lived in the Eurostar You Poop Ice Cream bubble for nearly 10 years. How could he find anybody in the English-speaking world that didn't want to buy him a drink, buy him dinner, pat him on the back, tell him he was the...
It's Kramer!
Exactly. Now, who knows what evil lurks in the man in the mind of the man that plays Kramer, but everybody wanted to be Kramer.
You know, I don't want to. We're all up on top of the news, David. But remind me of the conversation between Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe when we get back, because there's some of this in there too. Yeah, I know. All right, we'll be back in a minute. This is the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get in on this conversation, I welcome you. 877-443-2366. This ain't celebrity news. We're trying to get to the bottom of something here. Will we? I don't know. But we'll try. Stick around. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob.
The top of the hour.
This is the Quality News Network. For the fifth time in 2 years, a prominent anti-Syrian political leader has been assassinated. In Beirut today, Lebanese cabinet minister Pierre Gemayel was ambushed in traffic and shot to death. Lebanon's political stability is threatened. Massive street protests are planned by Hezbollah and other Syrian allied parties. In Iraq, U.S. and Iraqi forces conducted their third raid in 4 days of Baghdad's Sadr City neighborhood. 7 militia members were imprisoned. The military says they may have information about the American soldier kidnapped last month in Baghdad. In Washington, a congressional report by the Government Accounting Office recommends lawmakers take another look at U.S. policies in Iraq and Afghanistan. The GAO says Iraq's security continues to deteriorate. In Afghanistan, the Taliban is rebounding. At the UN, an international panel criticized Israel today for its actions in the 30-day war against Hezbollah. UN investigators say Israel used, quote, excessive, indiscriminate, and disproportionate force, end quote, against Lebanese civilians. The UN report says Israel violated international law. In the Gaza, 2 humanitarian aid workers for the International Red Cross were kidnapped today. The abduction is one in a string of such incidents involving aid workers and journalists. Diplomatic relations between Iraq and Syria were officially restored today. Nearly 25 years ago, Syria sided with Iran during the Iran-Iraq War. In Syria, the government has turned down an invitation by Iran's president to meet this weekend. Iraq's president accepted. Dampening the escalating sectarian war in Iraq is on the table. In Nepal, the government signed a peace deal with Maoist insurgents, ending a decade of civil war. At least 12,000 people have died in the conflict. In Guatemala City, a fire sparked by a lit cigarette tore through the region's largest open-air market. At least 15 people were killed. In Hawaii, 3 motorcycle policemen accompanying President Bush's motorcade crashed today. 2 police officers are listed in serious condition. The National Transportation Safety Board is recommending bus drivers be forbidden to use cell phones on duty. The federal agency says use of a hands-free phone by a bus driver led to an accident 2 years ago in Virginia, which injured 11 students. And film director Robert Altman died last night. He was 81.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of The Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At The Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
NASA says its Mars Global Surveyor spacecraft is most likely lost in space. Engineers lost contact with the orbiter earlier this month. NASA says it thinks the decade-old craft may be unrecoverable. Federal health authorities announced today that 37% of U.S. babies are born out of wedlock. The increase was most apparent in unwed women in their 20s. China and India announced a plan to double trade between the two over the next 4 years. The plan involves $40 billion, up from practically nothing 2 decades ago. For the first time, the price of Google shares has gone past the $500 mark. The milestone makes the Internet search company worth $154 billion. It is now Silicon Valley's most valuable business. The U.S. insurance industry released its list of the safest vehicles this year. All 13 spots were taken by imported models. The list includes Audi, Hyundai, Kia, Subaru, and Honda. In the luxury SUV category, Mercedes and Volvo were the winners. Light sweet crude is trading at $60.90 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 5 points at 12,321. NASDAQ up 2 at 2454. The S&P 500 was up 2 at 1402. Gold ended trading at NYMEX today at $627.10 an ounce. More at Quality News Network.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back, 6 minutes after the hour. This discussion about, and I think it really is a discussion of the dark heart of racism in America. This was taken into account to a certain extent in Susan Tolchin's book. We interviewed Professor Tolchin last week. A World Ignited: How Apostles of Ethnic, Religious, and Racial Hatred Torched the Globe. There's a chapter in there that refers to anti-Semitism as that very light sleeper. And I would submit to you that where racism in America is concerned, racism is not a light sleeper. Racism in America is... restless leg syndrome? Insomniac? Yeah. Let's go. I was carrying on a conversation with our good friend David in Tennessee, and I wanted to continue. I mentioned the Marilyn Monroe, Joe DiMaggio thing.
Bob, before we get to Marilyn said or Joe said, I need to make sure that all the listeners understand, and especially David, the previous David, luckily, recently, I've moved up from a dial-up that took away my phone service when I was online. I've moved over to a broadband, and that was made possible by one of the nicest new friends I've ever, the nicest friend, period, I've ever had. This gentleman was so gracious in his giving, caring nature to make sure I could make that jump to broadband, so I've gotten that out of the way. But the one thing that I think I did hear clearly that David said, previous David, something about the clubs have an interest in creating train wrecks.
Yeah.
You know what? If you're a 9-year professional at the level of a Seinfeld show, which means you had some professional experience before that.
Right.
And you're in a comedy club that seats 300, and anybody in that audience can goad you into that, never mind the environment the club invited you into, why did you go? And B, you ought to be able to avoid said train wreck if you are indeed a working pro at the highest level. If the club created the environment for a train wreck and you hurt yourself in front of people, that's exactly what it was. You hurt yourself in front of people. So, having that said, let's go on to Marilyn said to Joe and Joe.
Well, it was she had come back from a USO tour to Korea.
Okay.
And this was after Joe's career had ended.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was, but his career was over. And she said, "Oh, Joe, there were 50,000 people there screaming my name. Do you have any idea what that's like?"
Oops.
And Joe just looked at her and said, "Yeah, I do." And to a certain extent, this is where Michael Richards is. Can you imagine what it will be? What it is for any professional athlete who gets washed up, who doesn't hear the roar of the crowd, or that, you know, that highly regarded Shakespearean actor who no longer hears the roar of the grease paint and the smell of the crowd.
Sweaty it is.
There's a dynamic at work here. I think you could extrapolate it over to Flush Flimball's junk habit.
You might have to help me with that.
Well, what I'm getting at is when you've been to one place.
Oh, well.
And that place, and that place no longer either exists or does it for you.
Oh, if Flush is clean, I'm sure his show doesn't sparkle and resonate and have massive reverb the way it once did. I'm sure it doesn't feel quite as good as before because, well, you know what? There was that one time a long time ago listening to some really good music after some other folks in the room had experienced some really good hash. There's a certain enhancement.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's an endorphin rush in the applause. And there's an endorphin rush in that, you know, he couldn't buy, you know, you mentioned earlier, he couldn't buy his own meal. He couldn't buy a drink for himself. Ah, it's Kramer, let me buy you a drink. Those days are gone. I mean, this is the pathetic part of the career where the Stooges bring in Curly Joe. If you get my meaning.
I think I do.
And you're absolutely right. This is a guy who's supposed to be a pro, and he can't handle a heckler.
You know, if he had gone to that club and he had presented a comedic routine, and those folks, that tiny, tiny number of people that will watch Seinfeld tomorrow, I heard a guy on radio today say, at any moment in the known world, Seinfeld's on 50 places around the world right now.
It's the modern version of I Love Lucy.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's like, well, never mind what it might be like. You've covered it. Well, he's in front of 300 people, and 100 of them are sitting on their hands. 100 of them are going, And another 100 are looking for their coat and wondering who's got the parking ticket. And there's two guys down front screaming, "You suck." If he can't step back and go, "I'm going to get through this. I am on this stage for another 11 minutes. I'm going to do what I came here to do, and then I'll never be in this situation again, but I will leave with my pants up, and I will leave without disgracing myself."
Well, isn't this another card out of the same deck where Ron Artest goes into the stands at an NBA game? Was it Ron Artest?
Yes. It's similar, but I view that one slightly differently. That's an athletic thing, and that's race in reverse. I would rather not complicate the thing.
I think these are all threads on the same bolt. I understand your discomfort, but it's all threads on the same bolt. Because some of this isn't. Losing your cool at the Jiffy Lube and hauling out a racial epithet. This is someone who for some reason or another believes. You know, this is Mel Gibson drunk out of his mind on the side of the road screaming, "The Jews done it."
Oh, I really believe, and his last name is Richards, right? I do remember.
Yeah, Michael Richards.
Michael Richards, thank you. Michael Richards, Mel Gibson. They didn't suddenly pull that out of nowhere. That's in them. That stuff can't come out without it having been there before. You know a lot about Mel's dad. He lives just up the road, right?
Yeah, he kind of does.
Yeah.
Moved to West Virginia because there aren't any Jews here.
And Mr. Richards...
It's going to come as a great shock to my optometrist. You know, I got an email here from our good friend CB talking about Lenny Bruce. Said not just intellect and heart, but transcendent spirit. inherited Lenny Bruce's work. He was trying to take the power of ugly words away. He was trying to show the injustice, the self-seeking, the hatred thriving behind social taboos, and this nincompoop doesn't deserve mention within the same sentence as that great man. And I tend to concur. And I apply the same standard to Richard Pryor.
As do I. Bruce, Pryor, both of them, in using any racial term that we consider ugly, by bringing it up when they used it in the example that I gave about Lenny, when he did that, he called attention to the obvious disgusting nature of that. And you know, a black man in the mid 60s stands and applauds a black man that
is free
to do and say whatever he felt like at that time.
Well, you know, how many other of these sleazy epithets are there out there? And I'm not looking for excuses to use them, David. What is the phrase? God knows I heard it growing up. When something is sort of strung together in a haphazard fashion mechanically. A homeless person walking down the road with his belongings in a plastic bag is said to be hauling Puerto Rican suitcases.
Oh, you and I have heard them all. We hate it, but we know it.
Now, and the thing is, it is possible to tap that in a way that shines a light on the ugliness of it.
You can bring it to the attention of those that are watching, such that they know they shouldn't ever hear it again if they work at it. They shouldn't use it. They shouldn't tolerate it. They don't want it. They should push it out of the way. And that's what Lenny did when in the example that I gave. And that's why I cling to that one and have for a very long time.
Well, where I'm kind of going with this is the one part of Michael Richards' otherwise at least sincere sounding apology that I did take issue with. It is his statement that, you know, and he, it was a leading question by I believe Letterman. Were you doing this for effect? I think was the phrase. Yeah, I was.
Oh well, that was Letterman trying to get out of it. I've heard Mr. Richards' tone of voice. That was the same tone of voice. That was the same tone of voice that men in Tennessee said to a companion, a white companion, get a rope. There was invective. There was anger. There was all of that.
There was a reference to rope.
Never mind him saying, I'm not a racist, because all you had to do, the thing that flashed in my mind when he said, I'm not a racist, it was, I'm not a racist when people are watching. No, I don't buy it. I would have rather Jerry Seinfeld not said a word. I would have rather he waited 48 hours and say, I am surprised and appalled by what happened. That has nothing to do with what I'm about. I would have, you know, this effort to salvage the value of his residuals through reruns and syndication by arm-twisting a late-night talk show that really, really matters.
Well, they were hustling. They were there hustling the seventh season release of the DVD of Seinfeld. That's why Jerry was on Letterman last night.
And he used, my guess is, he used every lever he possesses, and they are manifold and they are powerful, to cause Letterman to accept Seinfeld's request to drop into the middle of that show a videotaped blurb from that guy?
Well, it was live, but yeah.
All right. Either way, an augment to, you know, I'm sorry, Letterman's going to have 100 more guests that say, could I bring my best friend on to talk about what matters to him?
No.
And Letterman's handlers aren't even going to let Letterman know the request has been uttered.
Sleazy business. Sleazy business. But, David, thank you so much for everything. I appreciate it. I honestly, like I said, I have real icky feelings about doing celebrity whatever. But
now this taps into bigger things, because if nothing else, there is no question whatsoever that the neocons of the Republican Party have made it acceptable to crack back on minorities. Because the fact that that guy could say that, and anybody might equivocate as to his guilt in committing a sin and a crime, is just completely illogical.
Yeah, and bear in mind that was everything is political. It really is. That's, I guess, why we do politics on this show, David. In the recent senatorial election, where Robert Byrd, who has baggage, was running for re-election to the United States Senate. His opponent, who is insane, a man named John Racy, his campaign resurrected Byrd's use of that vicious epithet in regard to white people from an early 1990s interview on Fox News.
Yeah.
So yeah, they have opened that door. We're talking about threads in the same sheet on the same bolt. This is the Corker ad, okay? This is that attempt by John Racy. This is Mark Furman's comment about so and so would do something and be back eating Kentucky Fried Chicken the next day.
Or that the world championship level golfer that said, in response to the question, "What do you suppose Tiger will order for his?"
Oh God, yeah. Who was that? I can't remember. Hubie Green, maybe.
At the Masters, oh, probably fried chicken and some other stuff. Well, anyway, the last thing I want the world to hear me say tonight is, I apologize for anything I misrepresented about David in Maine. I didn't hear everything he said.
No, you did. I don't think you did. You did.
Well, if. Either way, I love to hear the man call in. It's always informed. It's always incisive. There's always a point to be made that matters. I just didn't hear all of it. I wish that I had. And anyway, it's a wonderful night. And thank you, Bob. Great show. Let's just keep working at it.
I think so. Thanks, David.
You bet.
Take care.
Bye bye.
And on to Richard in North Carolina. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm okay, you?
I'm doing fine, and it was Fuzzy Zeller.
Fuzzy, yeah, okay, yeah.
How
could I forget?
Yeah, how could you, yeah.
Yeah, real knee slapper, that one.
Yeah, wasn't it, though? Yeah, and everybody thought Fuzzy was such a nice guy up to that point, too. And
he is when he doesn't have the sheets and pillowcases out.
Doesn't have the sheets, yeah. Doesn't have the green coats, or they're not still forbidding females from,
right,
getting impure, the hallowed halls of Augusta.
I don't have a stomach for this, but I was, as we've been talking about these comedians, Richard, I'm reminded of people who have done far more profound things and far funnier things. God rest his soul. Dadgum it, the names escape me now. Did this, screamed, I was married for two bleeping years. A recovering Pentecostal minister.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, God.
And tanked his career by chasing off after Jessica Hahn. There's working it funny and making a point out of it, and then there is working it, the Richards thing was vicious, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's vicious. The whole point of it to me, that struck me, about the hymn about Mel Gibson, and it strikes me here where I live in, in North Carolina. I live in the midst of a Native American community, and the overall county I live in is tri-racial, equally divided between Native Americans, blacks, and whites. And here, believe you me, the last thing you want is somebody getting together that has malicious intent yelling out, you know, insults, racial insults. That's the last thing in the world that's needed, you know, and for somebody to feel like they can resort to that. Anyway, one of the things that really struck me in the years that I've lived here is most Americans don't realize how much freedom they have when they indulge their anger. So many Americans feel entitled to freely and completely vent their anger whenever they want. I mean, look on the radio talk shows, not yours, of course. I mean, I'm always amazed when I listen on your show how rational and well-intentioned people are in terms of searching for the truth and trying to do for the larger good. I listen to people like Limbaugh, O'Reilly. These guys feel so entitled to express all their anger and for everybody to have to suffer it. And that's a freedom that not everybody in this country has been able to enjoy. Like you said, you know, imagine a black person back in the 1960s daring to even express a little bit of the anger that they justly had. You know, it just wasn't going to happen. And now for somebody, instead of trying to show the absurdity of using, calling names and racism, that they're just going to resort to them because, well, you know, it's the current mood and I can get away with it because I'm special, I'm entitled. Hey, to me, that whole kind of mentality reeks of the same type of fascist humor that you found in Germany during the early 1930s, you know, where you could make jokes, brutal jokes, at the expense of Jews and intellectuals, at the expense of gays and mentally retarded people. Didn't matter. You were in power. You could do whatever you wanted to do. And that attitude now for people to feel like, well, hey, I can say whatever I want to say, say it ever how I want to because I'm special and you can't do anything about it. People like Gibson that do that, I mean, that's just so repugnant to me. Don't these people have any sense of responsibility for the larger good, or do they merely hold that society is here to serve their own needs and nobody else's?
Well, you know, I just got an email, Richard, pointing me to an essay by Earl O'Fari Hutchinson over at Huffington Post, saying that Michael Richards' comments were reprehensible, but equally reprehensible are those by African Americans who persist in using the word as well. And that came to me from someone who said, as a black man, I was offended by Michael Richards' word. However, I think Earl O'Fari Hutchinson puts it into perspective. In my opinion, those other blacks who use the word openly toward each other are at fault as well. I don't know how we define the line. I know that passing something off as comedy is often an excuse of someone who is frequently, you know, financially or socially entitled to begin with. Like I said before, you couldn't get away with that at the Jiffy Lube.
I understand you couldn't get away with that where I live, talking with anybody, you know, with a different race. That's just not going to happen. And I understand the sentiment of going, oh, well, blacks call each other the N-word, so how come I can't do it? Isn't that hypocrisy? Yeah.
Or a double standard or whatever.
Standard. Yeah. And to me, that is so trivial in a certain sense. I mean, I understand it, and I realize the need to have an absolute standard. But at the same time, it's like when I hear whites complaining about reverse racism or blacks are just as bad as being racist as whites have been, it's like, folks, sorry, at this point in the history of things, that's not the case. That's not the case at all.
Well, it's not. And you know, as was pointed out by the other emailer, our friend CB, when Lenny Bruce came right out and said, I think we should use the word so much that it becomes absolutely meaningless within the language.
Yeah.
And I know what he was getting at with that, but you it takes well it was. Back when I was in school, I had a very pompous professor who said, "I teach by the Socratic method." You know, and one day I got a little fed up because I didn't think he was nearly as brilliant as he thought he was. And I said, "You know the problem with the Socratic method, Doc?" And he says, "What?" I said, "It takes a Socrates to use it, and you're not him."
Gotcha.
And that's the same thing with what Lenny Bruce does. I hate what this does to our country. We've listed a dozen different examples of when it's been played, whether it was Fuzzy Zeller or Mel Gibson or Michael Richards or Dusty Baker. If you're a baseball fan, remember that little blow up.
Yeah.
Somehow or another, it gets used, and there's always a viable excuse for it, and I'm sick of the viable excuses.
Sure, always. There's a reason for it. It seems like with anybody that's a celebrity, there's always an excuse. We're willing to extend them certain favors that we're not willing to extend to the common person.
And I say this because I can't masquerade as a member of any other race, I can hear it around here. In certain circles, I can hear that epithet used freely, openly, and easily, because people think that they're among people who are just as hateful as they are, and it's like whacking them in the head with a shovel if you say, you know, what in the hell's wrong with you that you're using that word in the 21st century?
No, I understand.
Well, it's not, and immediately the first thing that comes out, Richard's, well, it's not because I'm a racist.
Oh no.
Well, what the hell are you?
No, by any means. It's looked upon as being bad, as being racist, even though people have racist viewpoints. And let me tell you the word that has come to replace the N-word, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's also come to replace the worst possible thing that you could have been back in the 1950s, 1960s. Even worse than being a black was being a white that was an N-lover.
Oh, yeah.
That was horrible. There's been one word that has replaced the N-word and the person that was a lover. And that word is liberal. That's the code word.
Damn, yeah.
I mean, I'm serious. If you want, when I hear conservative whites here in the South talk about liberals, I automatically know who they're referring to. They're referring to black and they're referring to Yankees. I mean, invariably. It's like, it's like when I say...
So, you know, I never thought about it in those terms, but I think you're probably right, Richard. You know, when I hear it down south, and I was there for the primary election cycle this past June, and I heard, and whether it was a Democrat or a Republican running, I'll defend our conservative family values.
Mm-hmm.
What that was I'll defend our white family values, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You're getting it. You have to understand that the so-called Civil War was a cultural war. Okay? If you look at the way that Southerners framed it during that time, they very much framed it as being an assault upon Southern culture. Then after the South lost, well, then they became the new Troy. Just like the unworthy Greeks had defeated the noble Trojans, so had the unworthy Yankees defeated the glorious South. But somehow or another, the South has taken that legend, that mythology, and has expanded it over the years so that when the Civil Rights Movement started happening in the 50s and 60s, to so many white Southerners, it was a chance to replay the Civil War and to win. See, the South might have lost the Civil War, but hell, if it's not intent upon winning the Great Cultural War. And if you want to look at the expansion of the Southern Baptist Church of fundamentalism, the religious right, the conservative agenda, then what you really need to be looking at is the rise of Southern culture mentality. In the great American Cultural War that's been going on for some time now.
Well, you know, I mentioned to David earlier, he was opening doors. You are too, Richard. I can take you somewhere right now that is exactly on point with what you're describing. This was a contributing columnist guest editorial from Louisville Courier Journal the Lexington Herald Leader in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And our good friend Bruce Birch mentioned this on his program last night, but it bears repeating. America won't win another war until the 1960s flower children are pushing up petunias. Radicalized, the flower children morphed into lefty loonies who now masquerade as social progressives. No matter what they rename themselves, however, their agenda hasn't changed. They still want utopia, and it wouldn't be worth mentioning except that their navel gazing has aged into a persistent denial of reality that may have devastating consequences. For example, consider their continued belief that America's armed forces are neo-Nazi stormtroopers who delight in burning babies to further the aims of imperialistic corporations. This goes on and on and on. I mean, it must have been 8 column inches in the newspaper if it was a minute.
Sure, and I can remember back in the 60s and 70s hearing that. I mean, that was the prevailing attitude that anybody that...
You want to know where this all comes from, though, Richard?
Where does it all come
this
from? It's been going on for centuries.
No. This particular version is about 20 to... It's about as old as the Reagan administration.
Yeah, okay.
And it comes straight out of the death of the fairness doctrine, and it comes straight out of the rise of right-wing hate radio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And within the last 20 years or so, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that needs to happen is the fairness doctrine needs to be reinstated, and the 1996 bill that Clinton signed into law allowing for the mass
media ownership, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to take another look at that.
Well, I'm not so sure about the fairness doctrine because I'm very jealous about what we're doing here, and I would hate to think that the fairness doctrine could be reinstated and mean that every time I said Republican, I had to allow somebody on this network to say Democrat.
Yeah, well,
I don't like that. It's out there. The audio is out there. You know, maybe I need to find it and start playing it on a routine basis. When Rush Limbaugh said to an African American caller, "Call me back when you get that bone out of your nose."
Right, from the 1970s, and he.
Or have you the other one where he said, "Have you ever noticed that all police composite sketches look like Jesse Jackson?"
I remember that one quite well.
And why doesn't the NAACP buy a liquor store so they can practice robbing it?
I got you, and I particularly like the one about females voting with their vaginas.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Feminazi?
Yeah. Think about that. If that's true, what does it say about Rush Limbaugh not registering to vote until he was 35 if males vote with their penises?
Well, what does it say about a culture that because every time these people say one of those things, and that's what I disagree with out of Michael Richards, that's what I disagree with out of the guy down at the barber shop, they'll retreat behind some sort of an excuse of, well, you know, I'm not a racist, you know, that's just the kind of language I use.
Well, and that, and people want to hear it. I'm just giving them what they want. You know, people have got a right to all this. You know, I'm just an average Joe trying to make a buck. And it's like...
Or Rush, or any of these other wing nuts. Savage is particularly good at it. He's declared that the purple hand is at work in Hollywood. Just, you know, in insane bigotry. And every time you call him, you get, well, I'm only an entertainer.
You got it.
And lo and behold, I just checked my email, and I'm sure enough, I'm catching hell for this. I've got an email in here, Richard, and I don't know what to do. To you know, maybe we just move away from this. God knows there's plenty of other stuff to talk about, but I'm told Michael Richards, Marilyn Monroe, Joe DiMaggio, Flush Limbaugh, O.J., Richard Pryor, Mel Gibson, David Letterman, Jerry Seinfeld. Is this the Head on Radio meets National Enquirer episode? Jesus freaking Christ. I guess Mikey Tyson and the gloved one will come in with the second hour, huh?
And?
And, you know, I'm just, I don't like celebrity news. But we're trying to have an honest debate about
what?
Why this happens in this country.
Why in this country? It isn't a matter of, it's a matter of why we have such hero worship in this country. Why are there so many celebrities? We pay them so much attention. And, I mean, and why do they feel like they have a separate set of rules? And I think that's part of a pattern that goes back for a very, very long time.
You know, we live in a country that's going to spend more money on two bombers than the largest aid organization in the world spends feeding hungry people.
Mm-hmm.
And again, maybe I'm not connecting it well enough, Richard, but this is all cloth off the same bolt. I keep saying that. It's all part of the same thing.
It's all part of a diversion to keep us from staying focused on where we need to be focused. It's all part of a pattern of hypocrisy and tricks that go back for a very long time. You know?
Yeah.
It's like this whole thing, for example, of what's going on now with the cultural wars. Hey, this has been going on for a long time. You want to look at the history of cultural war in this country? First, the Revolutionary War. In a way, it was like a civil war. The second, or the Civil War is really like a second civil war.
Well, had we lost it would have been called a civil war.
Yeah, especially here in the South, you know, with the fighting that went on. And it goes way, way back. Listen, let me tell you something that I found out recently that really blew my mind, and I wrote an article about this at Op-Ed News, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about your basic hypocrisy. The Southern Baptists in North Carolina last week have decided they will expel any church that's friendly to gays, right?
Right.
Well, all the historical evidence that I've been able to find indicates that King James was probably gay.
Absolutely.
You know, so does this mean that they're now going to expel King James? Are they no longer going to have anything to do with the King James Bible because the historical evidence that's revealed in his letters indicate that the man has some very strong feelings?
Yeah.
What are they going to do?
Well, what they'll do, Richard, is they'll ignore it. They'll say, well, you know, there's no scientific proof that is a fact. You know, they'll go running for scientific proof when scientific proof is something they think can't exist and then therefore somehow works on their side.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't it amazing?
I don't know how their heads keep from just, you know, like Mars Attacks, just, you know, with the Slim Whitman music, just pop. I don't know how right wing religion fundies manage to get from one day to the next.
With all the hypocrisy, it's so amazing because on one hand they're so against science, then on the other hand they go to such great extremes with creation science, you know?
Yeah.
They've got to use scientific methods to prove that it actually happened this way, you know, in 4,000 years and so on. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah. I mean, this is it's all self-sustaining, and it has to be actively opposed.
Right. And again, we go back to the same bolt of cloth, because what it comes down to is there's a double standard that's going on. For those that are in power, you get to act one way. For the rest of us, well, you know, we live under a different standard.
And Condi Rice goes shopping while people are for shoes while people drown.
You got it. And meanwhile, our legal system is like a big fishing net. It's a strange kind of fishing net that lets all the big fish, the sharks, go right on through but catches all the small fry every time.
Yeah, that's the other side of this coin, perhaps, and that is that the Southern racism had its birth in the early days of indentured servitude, when the masters were afraid that the white slaves and the African slaves would gang up and start killing the masters, so they created the artificial notion that somehow being dirt poor and white was somehow a little bit better than being dirt poor and African. And to a certain extent, you've got that manifested again today in things like the bankruptcy bill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not black against white in America. It's poor against rich. I mean, there's where the real struggle is. It's working people against people who don't work.
It's the struggle. There's an attitude that was from the very beginning that held these rights are only for us who own America. We who are rich, we who own the land, we who are white and Protestant. This club only extends rights to us. We are the we and we the people. And thank goodness that the desire for freedom, the desire for justice and liberty transcends race, transcends gender. And that's why, you know, it's taken a hell of a long time for us to get as far as we've gotten in this country. God knows we've got a long way to go. But when you look at where we started at, with that attitude, I mean, we're still battling that attitude, that there's people who believe that we should have royalists. There are people who are better than us because they're richer.
That's Calvinism from the ground up.
It really is.
God liked you better, so he made you be born rich.
Right, and we should just automatically bow down and do whatever they say. And that kind of attitude, that's what really gets me, not so much about gossiping about celebrities doing this or that. I mean, shit, that's going to always happen any century, any time. But it's just the whole attitude of, you know, what's going to happen if, let's say, for example, I get stopped for drinking. My third time, I believe it was the third time for Mel Gibson being stopped out on the Pacific Coast Highway in Malibu, that finally resulted in him being arrested. And, you know, what's going to happen? If I go off like he did, am I going to get whisked off to...
You're going to get whisked, all right.
Yeah.
Your brains are going to get whisked, as in scrambled.
You got it.
You know, the three DUIs, I don't know about anywhere else, but three DUIs in the great state of West Virginia equals one felony.
Well, he didn't get DUIs the first two times.
Oh, no, he got the celebrity cab ride home.
Right, just go on home, you know. So, well, they didn't even get a cab ride. They just let the guy drive off, even though on one of the incidents, the officers definitely suspected that he had been drinking. And one of the times, he wouldn't even get off the cell phone, you know, to talk to the officer. And, I mean, you're talking about this guy doing 80, 90 miles an hour and out of the 45-mile-per-hour zone on the PCH. Granted, out in that area of Malibu, there isn't a lot of traffic sometimes, you know, but still, going 80 miles an hour in a 45-mile-per-hour zone, that's a bit arrogant.
That's reckless.
It's sociopathic. You know, it's antisocial. It's like, I'm better than society. You know, I'm special. I don't have to follow the rules. You know, I don't have to be concerned about the general good because the whole purpose of all this is for me to get as much as I can and do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it.
Well, I don't know. I hope the dialogue helps people to at least think about these things. I hope trying to connect the dots makes a little bit of sense somewhere along the way. If what I'm doing and if what you're doing and what we're doing here is nothing more than talking about celebrity gossip, then my email critic was absolutely correct. And frankly, I can just hang it up, turn it off, and quit for the night. But if there is an underlying meaning to this. If there is a problem in America that looks like it, and frankly, I think we are close to a boiling point. I think Katrina took us close to a boiling point that we're sort of teetering on right now.
There's right now we can go either way. We can boil over, and a whole bunch of anger, resentment can come out, or we can move forward and transform into something much larger. That moving forward is what I personally want to see us do. how we go about doing that, all I know is that we have to start with the attitude of that's what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. If peace is our objective, then we have to seek peace peacefully. Now, if we're going after justice, then we have to fairly seek justice. We've got to be the change that we're seeking in the world. We've got to be the kind of people we want to see in the world. That's not to say that we have to go around trying to evangelize or force our views on people, because I don't believe that. The only thing I want to force on people, if there's anything, is, hey, think for yourself, look at everything objectively, with an open mind, and also with compassion. Seek the truth without getting hung up on any given ideology or rhetoric or point of view. Because the truth is something that's much larger than any one of us, and yeah, all of us have got to have a chance, an equal opportunity for our voices to be heard. And when we take that opportunity, we need to do it in such a way that's mindful that our words do have impact upon people, and we don't need to be using the opportunity to incite hate, anger. That's easy to do. Anybody can incite people to be mean. Anybody can appeal to negative emotions, to the very worst in people. But to bring out the best in people, that's a different story. And that's one of the things I really appreciate about talking with you and listening to your show, is because I get the sense from you and the vast majority of people I hear on your program, that's also what they're wanting to do. Not that they're wanting to be, oh, middle of the road or wishy-washy and like dish rags or anything like that, but it's nice to have principles, but the most important principle of all, if it's going to be, if the truth is going to be absolute and eternal, then that means it has to be something that proves itself true time after time again in every situation. The only thing that I can know that could possibly fulfill those requirements is being open and approaching each situation in a manner of where I'm trying to do my best or and find out the truth and the right thing to do. Outside of that, you know, ultimately I don't know that, I know that I don't have all the answers, even a great majority of the answers.
But you're unwilling to simply sit back and be a consumer.
Absolutely, because this whole idea, this whole mentality of being a consumer is such a modern thing. I mean, the whole idea of just devouring resources mindlessly and doing so enriching other people just because I'm consuming. Well, you know, it's time to take back the means of production, and taking back the means of production in this country means that we have to become one with the government. We, the people, must be the government. The government has to stop being a third-person pronoun and become first-person plural.
Well, you know, there's a lot of truth in that, Richard, and it's reflected in the observation that was made that before the Civil War, the proper English was the United States are,
mm-hmm.
and after the Civil War, it became the United States is.
Right.
Sort of the reverse of what you're saying.
What we have to go is we have to become we in the United States, we in the government. That has to become one. To where government is not merely the people sitting in Washington or in the state houses, but the actual government and the people responsible for the government are you and I, and what we're doing here is governing.
Yeah, the government doesn't happen in the seat of power, because the seat of power isn't in Washington or any state capital or any county courthouse. The seat of power, if we only understood it, Richard, anywhere that you're working, anywhere that you're earning your living. It's in our schools, and yeah, to a certain extent, it's in our churches. It is anywhere that we gather together and remember that we hold, that we are the holders of power in this country.
Absolutely, and the people in Washington are not supposed to be our masters. yet we have given them almost a status of vet-like nobility. They should be almost like the Bible says, the last, you know? I mean, they should be the spokespeople among the Iroquois. Traditionally, in their form of government under the great law of peace, when they had a ceremony for putting somebody into a position of power, they called the service one of condolence, because it was seen as saying, like, we're sorry for you, that you're going to take...
Somebody's got to do this job, and it's you, and we apologize.
Yeah, and, but basically, they have the attitude, or traditionally had the attitude among the Iroquois, that you would never trust somebody who would ever want to have political office, because only a fool would want to have political office and have that kind of responsibility.
Well, and I think Benjamin Franklin made similar observations. Richard, I've got to hit a couple more calls, but I thank you for everything that you've brought up. I hope we're finding a way through this, and again, thank you for helping me not make it celebrity night.
Thank you very much.
You have a good evening.
You too now.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And onward to our good friend Andy in the United Kingdom. Hey, Andy, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling. Sorry you had to wait.
That's all right, man. No worries. Look, the celebrity thing needs to be put to bed, but ultimately, why did he do it? Because he's racist. Okay, the question then is, why are Americans, in part, why are some Americans racist? And that comes down to socialization. Okay, well, who's responsible for socialization? Well, that comes down to the government. Okay, well, why does it serve the government's purposes to have you lot at each other's throats? Well, it's class war, Bob.
As long as we're at each other's throats, we're not paying attention to the who's ripping us off.
Right. Now, okay, and I've heard a few things tonight that I can forgive, because they're socialized norms of American history, but they're just not true. First of all, the Civil War, it wasn't about slavery, it wasn't about freeing the slaves, it wasn't about the South's way of life. It was the South wanted their control of their own states, and Lincoln wanted control of the states, and that was it. And he only allowed black people to be free because he needed 200,000 extra men to put in front of the South's guns. And that's it. Okay, and anyone who says Lincoln wasn't a racist, okay, well, prove to me why.
No, Lincoln was an absolute bigot.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, here's the proof, okay? Lincoln let slave masters and slave traders come and take slaves out of his army and back to the South line. Okay, during your battle.
Well, the proof is even simpler than that, Andy, because it lies in the very nature of the Emancipation Proclamation.
Mm.
The Emancipation Proclamation freed the slaves in the states that were deemed to be in rebellion. There were oodles of slaves in the so-called border states of Missouri and Kentucky and Maryland. The slaves weren't freed there.
I know. And, you know, ultimately, it's because America is not and never has been what you lot have been taught since you were children. It's more like the dream you're taught than it ever has been, but it's nothing like the dream you're taught. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, you know, America started out, put it this way, right? The biggest ever world slave power was the United States of America. Nobody else had as many slaves and had their economy based on as many slaves as America did. Not even Egypt. Yeah? So...
Well, what about, I mean, for the sake of argument, Andy, what about the Raj?
Well, arguably a different society. I mean, there was a caste system, so slaves, but they weren't saleable, do you know what I mean? It's the same as bondsmen in Europe. I mean, they were slaves in effect, but not saleable. But just amount of slaves per amount of ruling class, America tops all of them.
I would say that there's, yeah, okay. And in terms of treatment of them, the greatest comparison is between the Spartans and their helots.
Oh, well, the Spartans, I mean, the thing about the Spartans is we don't really know, do we? Because it's not accurate records. But, yeah, they treated their slaves pretty damn badly. Probably, yeah, on a par or maybe even worse than. I suspect possibly worse than.
Well, you know, the thing... It is class warfare, okay?
Yeah, it's always been class warfare.
And but the question, I think, that continues, you know, socialization. If that was the case, then I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing.
Oh well, socialization is and can be broken by events you experience. Just being intelligent enough—that's a big thing, you know. I mean, because it's not fair for the majority of people who are racist, because they wouldn't have been racist if they hadn't been brought up in a racist environment. And they just don't have either the time or the inclination or the intelligence to think their way through it and realize how stupid it all is, you know? And it's not fair for them, but ultimately they've ended up racist, and we have to deal with that as it is. And it's very hard to change people's minds, but ultimately it does happen, you know? Like you say, you have the old KKK members who just woke up one day and went, what the am I doing?
You well, you know, we the pigs recently elected Trent Lott from Mississippi, who was busted and thrown out of the majority leadership four years ago for some nasty ass racist tinged comments. He was elected. He beat Lamar Alexander of Tennessee by one vote. And there wasn't, you know, there was not a mention made of the fact that this guy is a racist. This guy is a bigot. He is a member of the concerned conservative citizens, or whatever they call themselves, these Klansmen without sheets.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, but it doesn't serve the Big Five media's purposes to announce that. I mean, you know, if they announce that, then there'll be one less Republican, and they don't want that. They don't want that at all. And I mean, that's why it's up to you know, us, the opposite side, the people, the working class, and the people who work for the working class. Because, I mean, arguably, I'm not working class. I mean, my dad was a diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I work for the civil service. I'm arguably middle class or upper middle class. But, I mean, I don't align myself with the rich. I mean, you know, look, as a child, I could have gone to Mensa, and I realized early on that paying them money every year to get a little note saying I'm brainy was really stupid.
Which meant that you were actually smarter than them, probably.
Yeah, basically. I sent them a letter saying I'm obviously smarter than you. But I could have gone to Oxford and Cambridge, and I could have been a lawyer, I could have been a surgeon, I could have been a politician, I could have been whatever the hell I liked. But I realized early on, I don't want to do any of that. I don't want to be part of the ruling class because they're repugnant, and I hate it, and it makes me feel dirty just to think about how they act, you know? And my problem, possibly, was that I was too intelligent to get into... I mean, I could have been rich by now if I'd wanted to be, you know? But rich on what? Rich on the sweat of other people. Rich on the blood of black people in Africa.
Well, exactly. And I've made that same observation about myself from time to time. I could go to work for corporate America, but I don't think I'd survive.
No,
and by not survive, I don't mean I wouldn't be able to keep the job. I mean, I would die.
Yeah, no, I mean, it drives you insane when you think the way that we do to work in those environments. And ultimately, you know, everything that we talk about is part of a class war, racism, sexism. The war on drugs, all of it, it's all to do with class war. And I mean, you have to draw the links, and everyone will go, oh, it's a conspiracy theory. Well, what, you think that these people sit around in rooms? Yes, I do. Do you know what I mean? I think it's a conspiracy. What does conspire mean? It comes from to breathe together. And that's what these people do. They do a lot of heads together and talking and discussing things quietly in comfortable and plushly finished rooms, probably with waiters who are probably illegal immigrants, but you know.
Well, you know, that's God, don't open the illegal immigration door. I hate that phrase for starters.
Well, what's illegal immigration? It's a method of driving the wages of the working class down, you know, and exploiting the poor of another country. I don't blame the immigrants, although I mean, we have the problem here with the European Union says, oh, all right, okay, now they've joined, your borders are open, and you have to let them in to whoever's just joined. So we've got all the Romanian and Bulgarian mafia on the way in January, so Britain becomes less safe again, you know. But I don't blame immigrants, per se, for driving down jobs, and driving down the prices of jobs. I mean, they've come here because they can earn a hell of a lot more money and send it back to their family compared to where they live, you know. Polish people, the average wage in Poland is like £2,000 a year. The average wage in Britain is, well, you know, the government official figure is 18.
Yeah.
So of course they're going to come here and work as.
How do you balance that? I mean, that's that is contrived economic inequity.
Contrived economic global class war. They are trying to turn us all into slaves. I mean, the only way to do it is protectionism. All we have to do is we have to say, I mean, for example, Europe, 400 million plus people, world's biggest economic market, arguably. All we have to do is turn to every company, not country, and say, if you want to sell stuff in our countries, fine, okay? But if you don't want to be taxed thousands and thousands of percent. You have to pay all your labourers the minimum wage we pay across Europe, and we should have a standardised European minimum wage. So a Polish person doesn't need to come to Britain to work because they can work in Poland for the same wages. We should standardise the whole thing across Europe and then tell every company, Chinese, Thai, Japanese, American, everyone, if you want to trade with Europe, you have to pay your workers a fair wage. And when we're talking about third world countries, we say, fair enough, it's going to cost you, but we'll give you preferential trade deals until it's up to the right thing. And if you look like you're going back on our deal, that's it. We cut you off. You're not allowed to trade. We could do it all through trade, but it's all going to have to be protectionist. We can't have globalization. Globalization is American imperialism.
Well, and that's what isn't that what these students in Dubai were saying today?
Yeah, absolutely. They know. I mean, the people in Dubai are well-educated. I went to college with a couple of people from Dubai. Most of the well-educated people in Dubai are educated in Britain, and they know what's going on. You know,
and I love George's answer, H.W. Bush.
I think you need to go back to school. Yeah, because he wants you to go back to school and be reprogrammed with his message, because that's what most schools program people with. I mean, we need to take control of schools. We need to get into the parents and teachers associations and start...
Well, what the hell has George H.W. Bush ever done? I mean, this is the quote, Andy. He said, to suggest that everything we do is because we're hungry for money, I think that's crazy. What has George H.W. Bush ever done that wasn't for money?
Well, technically, he's not exactly lying. Most of the things he did was for money. A few of them were to deny other people money, which isn't, you know, he can... It's a weasel statement. He can get through that, okay? Logic can be used, and I came up with that in 2 seconds. So, you know, he didn't invade Guatemala or wherever it was that he sent the troops into South America because they were making money out of that. He sent them in to stop anybody else who was there making money out of, ooh, I don't know, taking control of their own resources.
Or, it was Panama, and it was because Pineapple Face Noriega was, he'd outlived his usefulness. He was their cocaine cartel businessman.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's
and
not
the, you know, the same thing happened to Saddam. It happens. You know.
Well, yeah, Saddam. It's not about taking the money of Iraq because there's no money coming out of Iraq. Iraq's a mess. The Saddam taking out Saddam thing is all about making money off the American taxpayers. And I mean, that's standard. They do that all over the place. That's hardly new. You know, and it's about denying the money to Europe. It's about denying oil to Europe. And
it's about denying money to the United States, for that matter.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you know, look at the economics. Look at the way your budget's structured. Okay. The corporate income in tax equals the military expenditure in tax. Okay? That's how it works. And that all gets used up on the military every
time.
So
it just gets turned around in a circle.
Yeah. Because, you know, military stuff is designed to... I mean, your tanks run for like 8,000 miles before needing a new engine or something ridiculously short like that. I mean, go and buy an engine from the Germans or something, for God's sake.
one of those nice Mercedes-Benz diesel engines.
An Audi engine. Audi engines are guaranteed for 12 years. They won't rust.
Yeah, those are gas engines. Those, you know, I think we still run our tanks on diesel.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, and why are you running them on diesel when biofuel is so much more cheap? Because obviously it makes money for the oil industry. I mean, look, you know, everyone can do something handy right now. Everyone needs to contact Nancy Pelosi and say, we support you in your righteous crusade, it is, to throw back the tax rebates and start actually taxing the oil companies in America. You all need to do that. That's one thing you can do at the top. And then another thing you can do at the bottom is take control of things like your school councils or whatever you call them, parents.
I believe in that wholeheartedly.
You need to throw out the conservative teachers, the teachers that just teach the government's line. What you need to do is you need to put in liberal teachers, not teachers that say this is how it is. You need to put in teachers that say this is how you think. Now think.
Oh man, we do that in West Virginia, and the crap really hits the fan, Andy. I mean, can you imagine little school children from say the age of 5 growing up and saying, why are they blowing up the mountains?
Exactly. That's what you need.
I mean, there are people who live in mortal fear of that kind of thing. And again, it comes back to a budgetary issue. It's why we have to have this war. That way money can't go into paying teachers fair wages and getting more and more young, enlightened people into that profession.
Yeah, because they want you all stupid. They want us all stupid. You know, it's why our education system here is being ruined by the Labour Party. It's why our NHS is being ruined. They want us stupid and unhealthy and grasping for anything they're willing to throw us. Just like Dickens wrote about. If anybody doesn't, you know, doesn't know what could happen, read Dickens yeah, and then add some high-technology surveillance systems to it.
Lord, I have a hard time with Dickens. The man was paid by the word, Andy.
Yeah, but he describes very accurately what life would be like.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, and he describes very accurately what life was like.
Well, yeah.
And that was the height of conservatism and free market economics, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the height of the bastardization of Adam Smith. Because Adam Smith never intended this. Nobody's ever read Adam Smith can ever say that he intended this.
Yeah, you know, you bring him back this is wild speculation, science fiction stuff. You take Adam Smith and you take Milton Friedman and you put them at the same age in the room together and they're going to come to blows.
I think Adam Smith would have, taken him apart and thrown him out the window.
Right, but the point is, Friedman, who recently went to hell, was ballyhooed as the second coming of Adam Smith.
Yeah, well, obviously the ruling class always like to try and claim that they're the new whatever's righteous, nothing new there.
It's the same old advertising scam, new and improved as anything but.
Yeah, yeah. And how many times do you hear new and improved?
Oh, and I did notice one thing the other day. The London Stock Exchange held off a takeover attempt by NASDAQ.
Yeah, another one, yeah. They're going to keep trying.
Jesus, I remember that book, Barbarians at the Gates.
Yeah.
I mean, and the thing is, the Huns and the Visigoths this time through are guys in bespoke silk suits.
Well, to be honest with you, actually, it's a curious parallel. The Huns and the Visigoths didn't really sack Rome. All the stuff about Rome being sacked by barbarians is rubbish. Rome was taken apart by its own ruling class.
Well, yeah, to a certain extent, they were paid.
That's what destroyed it. The barbarians just walked in and took control of the towns and the cities. There was no burning of Rome. Rome was never burnt. Well, it was burnt early on by Nero or whatever, and then it was burnt a few times well before that, back in, like, pre-BC time.
Yeah.
But Rome wasn't burned by any barbarians.
Well, no, there was one particular instance. We've got a very good friend named Eugene Finnerman. He is at finnermanworks.com. And you'd actually enjoy this. You ought to go by sometime, Andy. Finnermanworks.com. If you click on your RDA of irony, it's sort of an ironic history blog. And somewhere in the last few months, he pointed out the fact that it was the church that negotiated a deal with the so-called barbarians, who said, "Don't kill the people, just come in and loot everything and steal it."
Yeah. No.
And that's where we get the myth of the barbarian sacking of Rome.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was put in by the church as a political tool. It was, propaganda. So much of what we have from history, I mean, who wrote history? Mostly gentlemen, and that, transcribes to people in silk suits nowadays. And they wrote it from their point of view. And that's it, I mean, one of the main sources from Rome was Cicero, and he was a slave-holding fascist of the highest order. And everything from then on, like that, we have the rich people's history for the most part. I mean, it's only when you get to...
Well, that's what, that's what makes people like Howard Zinn so very, very important.
Oh, well, I love Howard Zinn. I'm going to go and buy his book because I've been listening to his speeches on the web and stuff. So, only from Marx and maybe a few others before them, but really from Marx and people like that onwards, have people actually written from the people's point of view and looked at things like history and economics and all that sort of stuff. And we're lucky we've got the web, because without the web, I wouldn't be talking to you.
Well, and I fall on my knees and thank something every day that this
thank
exists.
Thank the tax dollars.
Well, yeah. Thank the America. Thank Al Gore.
Yeah.
Because he was responsible for the enabling legislation that made the internet something that was open to the American people and wasn't just some secret, super spooky, dark defense thingy.
No, well, remember the Queen sent an email back in 1979, the first ever email or something. Probably not the first, but
tell me she didn't write "What hath God wrought."
Sorry?
I said, tell me she didn't write "What hath God wrought."
No, she was actually just, wrote some sort of friendly message to someone somewhere else for some reason. I can't remember what it was about. It was some,
it was the world's first spam. The world's first spam.
Well, basically, yeah, it was rubbish. But, you know, I mean, that happened in 1979 or 78 or something. I mean, when did the internet actually really happen? You know, like, a good 12, 13 years later, people started to have access. I mean, why did it take that long? Well, because, you know, corporations were trying to work out how they could make money out of it.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's all a question of figuring out how we get the pint of blood out of out of the guys who are, you know, working every day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, wages are taxed when really it should just be income. Look at the glaring inequalities in your system and realize it for what it is.
I remember taking a tax class and just wanting to go out and get in a warm tub and have done with it.
Well, remember, none of you have to pay tax. None of you ask the tax inland revenue. Ask whatever you call them, I can't remember.
Internal Revenue Service.
That's the one. Ask them why, what bit of legislation it is that demands that you pay tax, and they'll tell you it's the 16th Amendment, and you say, no, it's not the actual piece of legislation. And they will not be able to give you a piece of legislation. And
although, yeah, they'll give you the Reagan rewrite the tax code of 1986.
Yes. None of that is legal. None of that is legally obliging you to pay tax on your wages. The only people who are supposed to pay tax on income are the people who make income from profit. So remember that, everybody. And if you all stopped paying your income tax, it's not going to stop Social Security because it doesn't go to that.
No, Social Security is a separate set-aside.
Yeah, all your income tax goes to is lining the pockets of rich, white, fat, and I'm not going to swear.
Gotcha. Andy, thanks so much.
You too, man. Take care.
Have a good night.
Bye, mate.
Bye now. Wow. We have been all over the board. The heck with the news this hour. Right, Agnes? I mean, it's 16 minutes old now. And, you know, what are you going to hear about? You're going to hear that Lebanon, which was already shattered and blown into a million pieces from the rape of Lebanon earlier this year, just got a little bit worse today when Pierre Gamal was slaughtered in a suburb of Beirut. And, of course, he was he is deemed, within media speak, a key Christian politician. And apparently, people are fleeing Beirut for all they're worth. Because, well, there's a feeling that what the Israelis started a few months ago is going to come into full blossom now, and that all the hard work that was done to rebuild Lebanon into, once again, the jewel of the Levant is going to be undone in the full blossoming of civil war. The government was on the verge of collapse. The Shiite ministers in the Sanura cabinet quit after an accusation by Hezbollah that Sanura and his allies were collaborating with the United States and Israel in the war this summer. I don't profess to understand. I hate it. And, of course, you know, key in there is the accusation of being a collaborator with the United States. Do you remember? Now, I mean, we've got our screw-ups, and Andy is very good at pointing out our failings, even where I don't. And it is valuable to have that perspective because our failings are seen as manifest, especially in recent history, by people from around the world. It wasn't George Bush's domestic policy with regard to Katrina that made people show up in their thousands in Indonesia and made him tuck his cowardly tail and run like the coward he is from that Asian nation. Not at all. It is the perception that where once upon a time we used to do good things and we used to stand for the idea of freedom, that we have turned 180 degrees away from that, and that we stand now we stand periodically not with freedom but with despots and dictators. For the most part, those moments in our history seem to coincide with Republican leadership. The British government and the British Secret Service implored Harry Truman to help overturn the democratically elected government of Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran when he did the unthinkable and nationalized the Iranian oil industry, and tried to cut his British masters out of the loop. And Harry Truman, Democrat, would have no part of the overthrow of the democratically elected leader of Iran, because Harry Truman actually believed in a lot of that claptrap. It appears now to be claptrap. That was put out that talked about how we believe in the right of peoples to determine for themselves what the course of their existence would be. And Harry Truman met with, did he meet with him? Help me here. I can't recall off the bat. But was favorable toward Ho Chi Minh. To the point that, if I recall correctly, Ho Chi Minh drafted a declaration of independence for the Vietnamese people, their independence from France, that took whole segments from our own Declaration of Independence. And Truman again refused to participate in the suppression of the freedom movement in Vietnam, or to allow the United States to participate in the freedom movement in Vietnam. What about Korea? Different story. But no sooner had Harry Truman declined to run for another term, setting up the election of Dwight Eisenhower, than the vicious rooting of the national security state began to take place. And where Truman wouldn't have anything to do with the overthrow of Mohammad Mossadegh, the Eisenhower administration said, do it. And that is how you get Shah Reza Pahlavi, and what was the name of his secret police, the Savik, that beat and tortured and brutalized an entire generation of Persian people. And president after president after president flew to Tehran and stood on the balcony with the Shah and sold them guns and sold them every weapon we could produce and called them that royal filth, our good friends. Until in 1979, the agony grew to such a point that they wanted rid of the Shah so badly that they would take anything that wasn't the Shah, and anything that wasn't the Shah happened to be a hateful, crabby old, ignorant, barely literate bastard named Khomeini. Another religious freak. And we are reaping that vicious harvest to this very day. And the right-wingers will talk about how we have a long-standing grudge with Iran. Guess what, Hannity? You no good life support system for a stinking haircut. The Iranians have a longer-standing grudge with us. And so now I see this paragraph about the assassination of Pierre Gamayel That government was already on the verge of collapse following the resignation last week of all the Shiite ministers in his cabinet after Hezbollah accused Sinora and his allies of collaborating with the United States and Israel in this summer's war. I don't know about you, but I saw the footage of Sinora coming out weeping for what the Israelis were doing, slaughtering the Lebanese people. But he made a little too much kissy face with the Bush administration, and that damned his government. And that old coward, bailout Bush, goes to Dubai where he thinks he's safe, and a college student says to him that U.S. wars are aimed at opening markets for American companies and that globalization is contrived for America's benefit at the expense of the rest of the world. And he says, I think that's weird and it's nuts to suggest that everything we do... Oh my God, I've forgotten how to do poppy. I think that's weird and it's nuts to suggest that everything we do is because we're hungry for money. I think that's crazy. Tell it to Halliburton, poppy! And his voice quivers when he said, this son is not going to back away. Oh my God, now I'm doing Katharine Hepburn. He's not going to change his view because some poll says this or some poll says that or some heartfelt comments from the lady who feels deeply in her heart about something. No, George W. Bush is never going to be accused of listening to anybody who has heartfelt feelings about anything. You can't be president of the United States and conduct yourself if you're going to cut and run. It makes my head hurt. Bush also told the audience its derisive hoots were mild compared to the reaction he got in Germany in the 1980s after persuading the country to deploy U.S. nuclear missiles. Oh, Lord, you know, we're playing out some Oedipal psychology that you and I probably don't want to even think about. And we're playing it out in front of the people of the United Arab Emirates. Ew. I can't begin to tell you the pride I feel in my two sons. When your son's under attack, it hurts. You're determined to be at his side and help him any way you possibly can. Then for the love of God, George, get him to a rubber room. Your son is in over his head because he has spent his entire life trying to best you, Poppy. Maybe it would have been better off if you would have stayed home the day that you buried your little daughter and talked to little Georgie about it so that he wouldn't wet the bed till he was 14 years old. Instead of going to play golf with that hateful old beast you married. And incidentally couldn't stand to stay with and had to have a mistress in New York. With whom he shacked up while the little girl was dying of leukemia. Nice people, these Bushes. Bush said the presence of reporters in the audience prevented him from revealing the advice he had given to George W. Said he also wouldn't talk about his expectations for the findings of the Iraq study group.
I have strong opinions on a lot of these things.
Well, yeah, you did, George. You told the little boy not to do this. See, it's not all hunky-dory, and he's not really standing by his son because his son is peeling away the onion-like little layers of what little bit of a legacy George H.W. Bush had left. Some nights it's tough. This is the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The SEIU has reached a tentative agreement in the Houston janitor's strike. It will reportedly raise wages by $3.65 an hour over 3 years. The deal reportedly includes 2 weeks paid vacation, 6 paid holidays, and an SEIU designed and managed health care plan that won't kick in until the 3rd year of the contract. All striking workers will get their jobs back with no disciplinary action against them. The Houston janitors are voting on that tentative deal. Yesterday, Workers Independent News reported on allegations of excessive force being used by police against janitors protesting for better wages and benefits in Houston. Rachel Clark was there. Here's her firsthand account.
Houston Peace and Justice Center President Dave Atwood describes what he witnessed at the intersection of Travis and Capitol.
We saw these horses come out without any warning to the protesters to be able to disperse and move into these protesters and step on them with those horses. That was a wrong thing to do. And I call on the Houston Police Department right now to listen to a better way of doing things. You don't have to treat human beings this way.
The event Atwood refers to resulted in several injuries to protesters, including 2 fractured arms. It also left most, like Houston Janitor Deanna Morales, too shaken about the ordeal. Linda Tran holds a tearful Morales and shares a few words on her behalf.
As you can see, it was a very traumatic experience. Deanna was telling me a little earlier how she sustained bruises and she's limping today because she was pushed around by horses.
Among other allegations being made by those who participated in the direct action last Thursday are lack of medical attention as well as adequate food and water.
Hundreds of Smithfield workers who walked off the job at the world's largest pork processing plant in Tar Heel, North Carolina, returned to work on Monday. That walkout was triggered by management firing some 50 workers who could not produce legal documentation. Smithfield management let those workers come back to work and agreed to give them more time to produce the documentation. Workers face brutal conditions at Smithfield, and union activists have been trying for years to help workers there organize a union. Smithfield has a history of labor law violations, and in the past has used hardcore anti-union tactics to block workers from organizing. Here's Jesse Russell with today's economic report.
The economy is slowing, but will continue growing next year, according to 50 of the top economic forecasters. A survey released Monday by the National Association for Business Economics predicts that the overall economy will grow by 2.5% in 2007 due to a bigger-than-expected slump in the housing market. Housing construction is expected to fall by 3.5% this year and 5.5% in 2007.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
1, 2, 3.
For my sick and twisted mind, it's all part of a piece. Michael Richards goes on a profoundly untalented tirade in a seedy comedy club, and halfway across the country, I got this. Dateline Chicago: Muslim leaders expressed outrage on Tuesday after 6 imams were removed from a commercial airline flight in Minnesota for what they said was nothing more than trying to say evening prayers. Quote, they were treated like terrorists, humiliated, said Abu Hanoud, civil rights director for the Arizona chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations, who said the men were taken off the U.S. Airways flight in handcuffs. He said the men were still trying to find a flight back to Phoenix, where most are affiliated with a major mosque, after the carrier refused them passage following the incident on Monday evening. We are concerned that crew members, passengers, and security personnel may have succumbed to fear and prejudice based on stereotyping of Muslims and Islam, added Nihad Awad, executive director of the council. We call on relevant authorities to investigate whether proper procedures were followed by security personnel and members of the U.S. Airways flight crew. Jesus, you can see it, can't you? White bread America on an airplane. And there's a bunch of guys with beards and maybe some women wearing headscarves. And the guys are staring at, they're sitting there in their seats in the airplane, and they're staring at their palms, and they're saying something in a funny foreign language. And Ethel, for all I know, they was praying to Allah before they was gonna make the plane fly into the Sears Tower. Now, of course, I'm going to tell the stewardess and the pilot about it. It is terrifying, I tell you. Anud said in an interview that the men had been attending a three-day meeting of the North... the North American Imams Federation I didn't know they had a union, in the Minneapolis area, quote, discussing how to build bridges, unquote, between Muslims and American society, and that the FBI and local police had been informed in advance about the meeting. Welcome to America. You have to tell the FBI when the preachers are getting together if they don't happen to be some of Dr. Dobson's nearest and dearest and among the favorites. Quote, they were rewarded by being treated like terrorists. Their humiliation is really a humiliation for the entire Muslim community. And you know it is. Of course it is. It is proof that no matter how hard they work, no matter how hard the Muslim community attempts to assimilate, no matter how many soccer leagues they take their kids to, no matter how many school improvement projects they participate in, the fact that they are not part of what passes for Judeo-Christian religion in this country, which is more so-called Christian than Judeo, of course. That they're not welcome. And that they are looked upon as different and strange and dangerous. Now, granted, I mean, there are other strange sects. If a Hasidic Jew got on the airplane with the curls and the hat and everything, the only difference is that those same ignorant so-called middle-class Christians would think, oh, look at them, them's Amish. I wonder, do they have a buggy? Why are they on an airplane? God almighty. You know, Patrick Hogan, spokesman for the Minneapolis-St. Paul Metropolitan Airports Commission, said the airline asked airport police to remove the six men from the Minneapolis to Phoenix flight because their actions were... they buried the lead because their actions were, quote, arousing some concerns among both passengers and crew. These people weren't doing anything except praying. But the real danger came from the passengers and the crew who were motivated by their ignorance. Airways, said it was diligently conducting its own investigation. They also said, quote, it is always concerned when passengers are inconvenienced, and especially concerned when a situation occurs that causes customers to feel their dignity was compromised. Jesus, my dignity's compromised when I have to take my shoes off going through the metal detector. Our friend, young Jacob, on his way back from... Critical medical evaluation in New York, who was forced to throw his oxygen and medicine in the garbage. You know, his dignity was compromised, as well as his health. But you see, that's a different kind of dignity, because that's an affront to our dignity that is predicated on maintaining the fear necessary to prosecute illegal wars and war crimes all over this world. Local police, the FBI, and federal security officials questioned the men and released them, but they still couldn't get a flight back home. And guess what? It's not going to be any better if they try to prey on the super chief or the city of New Orleans trying to train it back to Phoenix either. Under normal procedures, he said, people taking off a flight under those circumstances would have been handcuffed. Though he didn't know if they were in this case. Well, at least they weren't handcuffed! At least they weren't shipped to Guantanamo out of hand under the new torture bill. Dang. Oh, where's that David Bowie song, Agnes? This is not America. Not at all. This is some alternate reality universe science fiction thingy, and I just happened to wake up in it for the last several years, and one of these days I'll wake up and, you know, you ever think like that? You ever kind of wish you'd wake up and the whole thing starting with the assassination of John Kennedy was just a big nightmare and everything is okay? Yeah. So, you know, that's Chicago. Chicago, where six praying guys are terrorists. Or thought to be. Because the rest of the people on the plane are so damn stupid. They can't tell the difference between a pair of open palms and a box cutter. God! And like our buddy Bruce, who will be along at 10 p.m. Eastern, by the way, our buddy Bruce mentioned it last night, this stupid, stupid letter from this stupid, stupid woman, Janine McBrady, writing in the Lexington Herald Leader, hippies still trying to ruin the country. You know, we got to end with a laugh. This is really, really, and I brought this up in our conversation earlier with Richard. This is what right-wing hate radio gets you. Such nonsense, now treated as legitimate by the left-leaning media, denigrates the patriotic values and sincerity of half the nation. It undermines the war effort, insults the dead and the survivors of battle and their families, and supports the aims of the enemy translated into immigration or national defense policy. It is an invitation to the world to destroy our country and heap dead burnt bodies and veins in my teeth. And then the sergeant came along and said, "You're our boy." To renounce their military fictions would mean facing bigger, more important truths. Marxism doesn't work. Love is not all you need. Western culture is worth defending because it protects freedom, tolerance, and the greatest material good for the greatest number. Government can't solve every problem. The American taxpayer has no obligation to support the rest of the world's exploding population. Without the military-industrial complex to blame for humanity's ills, the lefty loonies lose their basis for faith in a socialist utopia. Terrorism is tortuous for them only because it forces them to pursue the political goals that will allow them to redistribute America's wealth by putting the nation together and relying on the hated military for protection. Oh, the unfairness of irony. Thus, lefty loonies deny that terrorists have declared war on America. While insisting that we can win the war through negotiation, they seem to believe the terrorists will spare them because they are nice. The truth is that there is no way out of our modern warfare dilemmas. It's, I mean, and on and on and on. Luckily, no one lives forever. Luckily, there is Generation Jones to take up their slack. America is too great to go down without a fight. Yeah, because that's what we're here for. We're here to fight. This woman is, crazier than a run-over dog. More out there than a cockroach on a snoot full of decon. I mean, she's just wandered on all six legs out of the big raid party. But, you know, that's not the end of it. That's the... You know, while we have debates on what it is that motivates the fact that that motivates the racist, bigoted, ugly, hateful screeds, while we do that, I'm still getting emails. Help me, dear God. Slugs in them, titles, whatever, where it says why liberals hate Christmas. That's right. Why liberals hate Christmas. No, I'm sorry, loathe. Trying to get me to bring some nasty woman who probably plays cards with the other nasty woman who wrote this particular editorial. I'm just sharing this with you. This woman who is the author of Help Mom the Ninth Circuit Nabbed the Nativity. Oh, Jesus, forehead meet microphone. I came across a bumper sticker the other day while Christmas shopping that proudly proclaimed, "Jesus was a liberal." Of course, this gave me great pause. If Jesus was a liberal, you might as well forget Joseph. Jesus would have had two mommies. You know, these right-wingers are kind of out there. I mean, she just... Is it me, Agnes, or did she just accuse Mary of... liking, yeah, girls. I thought they, well, what have we been finding out about the right wing? One great big closet. He certainly would not have advocated teaching a man to fish to eat for life, rather to give a man a fish each day because the man would never amount to anything anyway. The irony, you know, pearls before swine. The irony is lost on this crowd. I mean, if they would read the Bible that they're so fond of thumping, they would find out that, you know, the miracle of the fishes and the loaves and the multitude. Here, everybody, come here. Jesus said to give you a fishing pole. Now y'all come back in a couple of hours and bring your crappie and your catfish with you, and we'll sit down, we'll cook dinner and talk. No. He gave them a fish and fed them. He didn't tell them they weren't being conservative enough and that they needed to go and pull themselves up by their hip waiter straps and go fishing on their own in the Sea of Galilee. According to liberals, Mary should have had the right to choose. Mary did have the right to choose. There were lots of herbs and spices and various and sundry remedies in that day and age that women used frequently to cast out unwanted pregnancies and demons. Mary would have had the right to choose. Why would liberals invoke the name of Jesus when they strive to take every reference to God, the Son, and Holy Spirit out of the public eye, especially at Christmas time? Maybe because it's not whether it's in the public eye that matters, it's whether it's in the public heart. Yeah? Now I'll tell you that. Look, let's just, I mean, we're going to be dealing with the Christmas season coming on fairly soon, and let me just tell you straight up, I start fretting about Christmas long about September. Why? Because it's stressful. And I don't mean to sound like some sort of old fogey or fuddy-duddy or anything like that, but it is not the Christmas that I had as a child. My God, Thanksgiving's not here! And the Christmas displays are already up in the store. It must have been a really rotten retail year that they got to start cramming Christmas down my throat before we've even carved the turkey. I mean, I guess, my social barometer is the local Rite Aid. Halloween, the Halloween stuff was still in the markdown bins at the front of the aisle when the Christmas crap was going up down the main alleys. As a kid, I got stuff that I wanted. Never got my Batman utility belt until last year. 40 years I'd wanted that Batman utility belt. I finally got it from Agnes last year. I was still celebrating Christmas. My parents were still celebrating Christmas, and I would find, I'd go to the stocking, and it would have a couple of those great big, just almost pure sugar sweet navel oranges and some Brazil nuts and hazelnuts and pecans to crack, and a couple of peppermint sticks, the barber pole things that you'd work on for a week. And that was at least part of it. Now, the older I get, the more I sympathize with Charlie Brown and Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown. I love the lights of the Christmas season. And that has nothing to do with the birth of Christ or Mithras or just about anything else. It has to do with the fact that this is the darkest time of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. And that a little bit of light goes a long way in making people a lot less miserable. I would invite this crazy right-wing woman on the program, but I've sent them request after request after request. Come on, let's talk. They won't show. Because, again, they won't play on a level playing field. They won't play unless they've got some sort of freak making an amen corner of it. You can't challenge them. You're not allowed to challenge them. And so, in many ways, here, let's have done with it. I loathe Christmas. I loathe the greed that it brings out in our precious little children. I loathe the stress of going into any retail establishment this time of year. Agnes and me, we just sort of hunker down in the bunker the day after Thanksgiving. And, we won't go out for gasoline because somebody will be trying, oh, Jesus, the gasoline's going to be cheaper the day after Thanksgiving. It's disgusting. If I had the wherewithal to do it, I think I would like nothing better than to take a vacation to somewhere where the snow is going to be waist deep. What do you want on Christmas, Agnes? Your toes in the sand drinking things out of coconut shells with umbrellas in them?
Did that song earlier not hint to that? Put the lime in the coconut?
Yeah.
Skippy. I'd like to be somewhere with my toes in the sand.
Yeah, but...
But wait a minute. You talk about Christmas is not about anything other than commercialism. They talk about Christ at Christmas, but Christmas is a pagan holiday.
Well, at the very most, it's Saturnalia. It's the Roman Saturnalia.
What it comes down to is everyone wants to talk about Christmas and be all warm and fuzzy.
But nobody wants to do anything
about
it.
No, wait a minute. But where's the goodwill towards your fellow man? Where is it?
There isn't any. We're busy killing our fellow man.
Hold on.
And screaming racial epithets at him.
Think about all the children that are out there, especially after Katrina. But not just that. Just the poverty that's involved. And you look at those poor children. There is no Christmas spirit. You know, clean out your closets. Go, even if you can just take a can of food to a shelter, do that. But think about other people. Christmas is about that. Show somebody some warmth and good wishes.
See, we're guilty too, dear. Here we are. It's not even Thanksgiving, and we're being sucked into it.
No, I'm not. Maybe you are, but I'm not. I'm not sucked into it. I do this all through the year. Because I've been helped like that. And I like to do it in return. Just because I believe there is good in humanity, you just got to dig really deep to find it.
Thank you, dear. Seems like lately you have to dig deeper than usual. But no, my druthers, I'd like to go up, you know, what is it? What do they call it? The Northeast Kingdom, the Northwest Kingdom of Vermont, where summer is summer and the 4th of July take place at the same time. Cabin in the mountains. Sit there and cook and bake and make wonderful things to eat and sort of separate ourselves and really, really cherish family. No TV. Okay, a little bit of internet.
Yeah. We'll have to do the show.
Yeah, we got to do the show. But I think, you know, I'd love to do the Christmas that I imagine happens in England or Scotland. Or at a castle in France, and Agnes and I could live. A castle in France, Chinon, and you and I could just do our own little family performance of The Lion in Winter.
Castle anywhere you can do that.
But this is a season of frustration, and to be lectured by a bunch of people who call themselves Christian and have no more idea what the message of Christ was than a hog knows about a Sunday suit. Just makes me want to scream, especially on a night like this. So, thanks, everyone, however you participated. The show tonight was produced by my lovely, talented, and congested wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. John Fox in Sydney, Australia, engineered it. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all the programs on the Horn. And I should mention at this point, the Horn schedule is going to get a little fluid for the next few days because of the holidays. There's no live Mark Levine tomorrow, and no live John Fox. I expect that I'll be live. Maybe I may be live on Friday as well. Bruce will be live here in about an hour. But we're going to have a Christmas Day jambalaya feast of horn programming. That's what Ben said to call it. Peter Godbold is our IT professional. He makes all the bits and bytes do what bits and bytes do best. And we appreciate it. We are especially appreciative of all the thousands of members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters who get up and go out every day, rain or shine, and build the American dream. And in building the American dream, they're supporting this network, which is trying to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
to the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. The Washington Post reports the Pentagon has laid out three options for the war in Iraq following a secret review commissioned by the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The first option is to put more troops into Iraq. The second is to reduce the size of the U.S. force but stay longer in Iraq. And the third is to pull out of the country entirely. These can be simplified as, quote, go big, go long, or go home. Senators are split on the possible military options in Iraq. Yesterday, Arizona Republican John McCain said he supports more troops. However, Michigan Democrat Carl Levin wants the troop withdrawal from Iraq to begin in 4 to 6 months. President Bush said today he hasn't decided whether he will send more troops to Iraq or reduce the size of the force. He wrapped up his week-long trip to Asia with a six-hour stop in Indonesia, where he was greeted by thousands of protesters. Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger said in a British television interview Sunday that military victory in the war in Iraq is no longer possible. He also said the United States must enter into talks with Iraq's neighbors, including Iran. The Associated Press reports that Iran has invited the Iraqi and Syrian presidents for a weekend summit next week. They're expected to discuss how to stop the spiraling sectarian violence in Iraq. And in Iraq, that violence has claimed the lives of 48 Iraqis today, including a popular television comedian and a college professor. The Iraqi death toll so far in November is at least 1,370, according to the Associated Press count. A human rights group released a 97-page report that said the verdict in Saddam Hussein's first trial is, quote, questionable. Human Rights Watch states that the trial was not carried out fairly and the Iraqi court was not capable of handling the complex case properly. A school bus accident in Huntsville, Alabama today has killed two teenage girls. 30 students were injured when the bus reportedly plunged headfirst more than 30 feet off an interstate. In eastern India, a blast Monday evening on a passenger train killed at least 8 people. About 60 others were hurt.